It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Wow, what a philosophical, wonderful, fascinating show. Perhaps has something to do with our great panel. Ian Thompson is back, Phil Libin, and Lisa Schmeiser. We're going to talk about Tesla's new truck and Roadster. Can artificial intelligence be a godhead? The religion of AI, national AI wars, a backflipping robot, and a new dog. One nice, one not so nice. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 641, recorded Sunday, November 19th, 2017, the Tesla Zamboni. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Capterra. Find software solutions for your business needs. Capterra is a free website with over 400 categories of business software and thousands of ratings and reviews from software users just like you. Visit Capterra.com/TWiT today. And by Scott eVest, a full line of functional clothing that features well-designed pockets so you can carry all of life's gadgets without carrying a bag. For a limited time, go to ScottEVest.com/TWiT and use the promo code CyberTWiT to save 30% on most items. And by WordPress. Plans start at just $4 a month. Find out why 29% of the web runs on WordPress and get 15% off your brand new website today at WordPress.com/TWiT. And by Betterment, the largest independent online financial advisor. For a free 5-minute investment review to help you assess your investment accounts, tax strategies, fees, and risk exposure, visit Betterment.com/TWiT. No sign-up required. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we talk about the latest news from the tech sphere with some of the best tech analysts, journalists, and just men about town, women about town. Ian Thompson is here from the register.co.uk. Always wonderful to have you in.
Always great fun to be here.
And I'm thrilled that you chose the Adventure Time mug. It tells a lot about our visitors with the coffee mug they choose.
Honestly, I chose the largest one I could find. I'm going to be doing a lot of talking, and I need all the energy I can get.
Phil Libin is also here from All Turtles. Of course, you remember him from Evernote. He chose the TWiT mug. Good choice. Mm-hmm. Very bland choice, but good choice.
I'm on my fourth one, though. So.
Ah, you are. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is it hot water or is it coffee?
It's coffee.
Okay. You can't tell with that mug. It's a dark mug. Lisa Schmeiser is here from the super site for Windows.
Not
and of course,
anymore. We rebranded just last week, believe it or not.
Let's fix the lower third. What should it say?
It should say IT Pro Today.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah, we consolidated several of our sites. We're now IT Pro Today.
IT Pro is one of the Petri brands. It's been around for a long time.
Windows IT Pro has been around for a while. This is just IT Pro Today.
Got it.
So it's more platform independent. We folded in the Windows IT Pro family of sites, plus Supersite for Windows and a few others.
And we have folded it into your lower third.
Excellent.
IT Pro Today. Yes. Look at that. Mm-hmm. Editor there. You all have podcasts. Phil's got his All Turtles podcast. You have Phil and Lisa Ruin the Movies podcast.
That's right.
That's on the Incomparable Network. Mm-hmm. What movies have you ruined lately?
We actually have a running queue of movies we need to ruin. Because as you know, the premise of the podcast is that we review movies based solely on the movie trailers. We don't go to see the movies. We pre-ruin the movies before they hit theaters.
Well, the trailers often do ruin the movies, I must say. I don't think that that's a stretch. For instance, I have steadfastly refused to see the new Star Wars trailer. December 14th, we've got tickets to see opening night. But
don't watch the trailer.
I think the trailers reveals a lot, I've heard. And I don't want to know. I did accidentally see a porg.
Yeah. Well, this was my complaint actually about the Thor Ragnarok trailers, because one of the biggest plot twists was revealed in the trailer with a punchline. And I get why they edited it. But again, it would have been a much more impactful moment in the film if it had been a big surprise.
And the other thing is comedies, often all the humor is in the trailer.
Yeah. Yes.
And you go to the comedy and there's nothing funny because they wasted it.
Yeah. Exactly.
So don't watch trailers, kids. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. Enough of that.
Mm-hmm. I'd see worried about the porg, but no, it's...
What are porg? No, don't tell me. I don't want to know.
No spoilers. This is a spoiler-free zone.
Spoiler-free zone. What were the big stories of the week? You know, I probably should do this before the show begins.
What? Prepare.
I like the Tesla. I called it the Tesla diesel, and then it was pointed out there ain't no diesel in a Tesla semi, an 18-wheeler. Mm-hmm. Elon Musk announced the first Tesla truck.
I have to say, handsome truck.
Yeah, but
I'm tempted. I want to get one. I wonder if Calacanis, he says he owns every Tesla. Will he buy a diesel? I mean, a semi?
I think he's more into the roadster myself, but given all the news we've had over the last month or so, when I woke up to the Twitter feed going Tesla semi, it was like, oh no, not him too.
But, know. Nowadays, any man's name is mentioned, you go, oh God, oh God.
But,
well, actually, there have been a lot of, I have to say, some accusations about the Tesla factory in Fremont about racism and sexism.
I covered one about 9 months ago as well. This seems to be sort of bubbling under.
And Elon's attitude is, well, just get, you know, man up. Mm. Like, get a thick skin. I don't think that's exactly...
It's a very comfortable perch, the right thing to say. Where he can say that.
Yeah.
So. And the guy just worked himself into the ground, but it's not really something that you can... Yeah, it's tricky. Yeah. My big worry about the truck, though, is, you know, I live near Oakland, and they were talking about the aerodynamics are better than a supercar. But if you've actually got to put a container capsule on the back of this, that's going to create an enormous amount of drag.
It's just, in fact, they even admit that because they talk about range. Yeah. Mm. But the range is like 30% better if you're convoying. In other words, if you're drafting off the truck in front.
Yeah.
So is there a plan to have some of these be self-driving as well? Or is this...
you have to think that's inevitable.
Yeah, because if you take a look at where... truck driving is going, the two biggest costs are going to be fuel and human labor. And the trucking industry has been trying to reduce the human labor costs by finding ways to automate convoys. And when I was looking at this story, I thought, well, you've made a very pretty truck, but I don't see how this addresses your ongoing quest to cut labor costs. I don't know what the financial incentive is yet. I would love to figure out or hear anybody's explanation for why, if you own a fleet of trucks, you're going to say, I'm buying me some
Teslas. Well, I'll tell you one way. Mm-hmm. But by the way, Loblaw, UPS, a number of people have already ordered these trucks. We don't even know what it's going to cost. Mm-hmm. One way you're reducing labor costs, there's only one seat in the thing. It's just you. You can't even pick up hitchhikers anymore.
Well, you can't bring your partner with you either because there's a lot of long-haul truckers that either drive in teams or they have a spouse with them.
And look at the console. It's just basically a screen, a couple of screens.
But you see, this is the way I think the industry is going. When we've seen with Otto, there they had to have a human driver in the cab because the truck can't handle city traffic. On the freeway, it's fine. You know, the guy can pretty much go to sleep. Please, goodness, no.
Even a Tesla on the freeway does fine right now. Any of the Teslas do fine.
But I mean,
you don't want to do them if it's a curvy road or if it's raining.
The Teamsters are not going to allow driverless trucks for
a while. It's inevitable.
It is inevitable.
Yeah.
And you're going to see a lot of truck stop towns die because of automation. And the knock-on effect in terms of employment is going to be huge.
Well, I think you may see, like, two-stage trucking where you have long hauls that are mostly automated, and then there will be...
A short-set route
where it's a human driver, and perhaps this is where the Tesla market will come in handy because you're still reducing fuel costs, which is a big consideration, and they can be human-guided so they can handle Oakland or San Francisco during rush hour.
500 miles of range, Tesla said that 80% of all... trucking routes are 350 or less, 350 miles or less. It will charge in half an hour using a new mega charger. That may be what keeps truck stops alive because you're gonna you're gonna have to go to a special charger. But the good thing is you can have your chicken fried steak and charge the diesel or diesel. I keep calling it diesel. Diesel is not a generic term for semi tractor trailer.
Yeah,
it is an 18-wheeler. No rear view mirrors, but that makes me think it's probably got cameras galore.
I think you guys are thinking about this wrong. I think it's not so much a truck as a case for the new Roadster.
Well, that was the one more thing, and I thought that was great. Zach Estrada's writing. Yeah. He says, the first time a tractor trailer has been introduced with trance music. Lots of there was fog machines. And after Elon shows the truck and talks about it, I think he drove it in, as a matter of fact. I wasn't at the event, but it looked like he drove it in. Then he says, one more thing, and the truck opens up, and out of the back...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Comes the lust object for every car.
A $200,000 Roadster. And this is how Tesla started with, they took a Lotus Elise and they put an electric motor in it. This is not exactly the original Roadster.
I think this is the new rule. From now on, companies must only announce products
within products
simultaneously. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you need to have like a turducken launch.
You're from Russia. This is the nesting doll theory.
Exactly. This is why
product
this
launches
speaks so like to my deep soul.
Yeah. So like Apple has the Apple Home, and when they pop it open, there's another iPhone inside it, and you pop it open. There's
like
earbuds.
That.
From now on, I only care about products that fit inside of other products.
Yeah. And at the end, it's always.
So when this is a plot line in the next season of Silicon Valley, I hope that you reach out to Mike Judge and tell him that you thought of it first.
That's right. You heard it here first.
I can see the nesting doll strategy becoming huge in Silicon Valley.
At the end of the day, this is the typical supercar that companies like McLaren are putting out. They'll put out a few thousand of them. They'll be pre-bought before they're before they're rolled out, and they're a prestige product which drives the brand. Mm-hmm. I'm more worried about the Model 3. There's been very little
big
talk
problems
about where they're coming on the Model 3, and that's got to get sorted out if they're going to be a large-scale car manufacturer.
I'm not too worried about, to be honest. I feel like Tesla always has production problems when they begin new models. The Model 3 isn't so very different from previous Teslas, as far as I can
tell. No, but they need to get volume. There's a lot of hundreds of thousands of people waiting for this
car. Yeah, they'll get there. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think this happened with the Model S when it came out. I know it happened with the Model X because I bought one.
So is it a scale concern? It's a concern of whether or not they can actually scale up the business from being a micro-luxury to something that actually fundamentally changes American transport?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, it's just whether or not they can do that in America, because they made a big thing about manufacturing in America, but at the same time, the China plant's now coming online. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be interesting to see how it develops in that, yes, we do need something to give the car industry a massive boot up the backside. Mm-hmm. But it's whether or not you can do it in this country economically, whether you've got to go to China to do it. I don't know.
I don't think I'm ever going to own a car again. I really don't. I don't think I'll ever buy
Uber everywhere now and stuff like that.
I have a car. I haven't touched it in about a year and a half.
Wow.
It literally not only won't start, it doesn't even like pretend. It doesn't even make that sad little like noise when you try to start it. It's just dead. No, it doesn't even do that.
Click.
It's like a statue of a car at this point. I need to figure out how to like haul it out of my parking space.
Drain the oil, put it up in blocks, and then...
I don't think I'm ever going to own a car again.
Take a hatchet to it.
Well, I'd be interested to see if Tesla ever actually moves into, say, agricultural vehicles. Or I mean,
I don't think I'm ever going to own an agricultural vehicle again.
No, but I was thinking if don't you want a combine? Everyone should want a combine.
I actually kind of do. Yeah.
Well, this is well, I was talking to some engineers at VW about self-driving cars at one of these Internet of Things shows, and what the engineers and I were talking about was it's one thing to talk about transforming the auto industry and having these ranges when you're in a pretty well-populated urban grid where you can have your charging stations every so often. But America is also comprised of vast tracts of land, huge tracts of land.
Built a Scotland.
It's also electric. It's not as good in cold climates. Yeah.
There's still a huge agricultural sector in America, and there are things happening there with, they're bringing more robots online to do work and things like that. But you're still looking at a lot of technology that has been pretty fundamentally unchanged over the last 50 years. Like few people are wringing their hands worrying about the energy sink that is your average combine or thrasher or.
Yeah, that'd be a great use for it.
Yeah, so I'd like to see
Zamboni. Let's not forget, hockey rinks everywhere should have Tesla Zambonis. Yeah.
But I mean, there's also
I'd buy a Tesla Zamboni. There's also just to drive it down the street.
Yeah. I mean, there's also the rest of the world angle in that Holland, the UK, France are all introducing legislation that will basically ban the sale of new carbon-based cars in 2025, 2030, whenever. China is going the same way. Yeah. We're in the middle of a fundamental shift here.
Yeah.
I just like to see American car companies go, oh, yeah, hang on, we're missing a trip.
Well, interestingly, when Tesla announced the truck, it was pointed out immediately that Cummins, which is a big diesel truck manufacturer, and Daimler, among others, have already announced the plans to electrify. So this makes sense. We want to eliminate pollution. Yeah. Fuel economy is a big part of the business model. This kind of makes sense.
It's logical. I mean,
isn't it though the case that none of this makes any sense until, and this is imminent, electric power generation and batteries get to the point where it is more economical than fossil fuels?
Yeah.
That's where we have to get before this really.
You've got to have an infrastructure that supports it too.
Yeah. Well, that's a big problem. That's why Elon did the supercharger network. Yeah. And I think that reduces a lot of the range anxiety.
Go ahead.
Please.
Oh, no, no. Thank you.
I think there's three factors here which are all being munched together but are really separate that are going to affect the future of this industry. There's electricity versus fossil fuels. There's autonomy. And then there's the future of ownership or financing of the thing.
Yes.
I think those are three kind of independent things that are everyone kind of clumps together, but they're probably going to move. They're all changing significantly, but they're going to move at different speeds.
Yeah. I feel like autonomy and ownership are linked.
Not necessarily.
I don't know if people are going to buy autonomous cars, but I think they'll be very comfortable getting in an autonomous shuttle or an autonomous Uber.
I think the ownership thing is rippling out now, because you mentioned Uber, but you're talking, you look at home ownership trends, and home ownership as an idea is losing traction.
Is it really?
It's losing traction, especially among younger people who have student loans. And then if you look at the rise of streaming media services, where people are like, I'm fine with not having to buy a terabyte drive to own all this music and all of this film.
Yeah, right. No one even knows what that means anymore.
That happens so fast, though.
Yeah, that happens.
Or there's clothing rental. For example, one of the growing sectors is actually wedding clothing rental. Rent the Runway has just
They do dresses?
They now do wedding dresses. Bridal dresses and bridesmaids dresses. And their argument is, why should you have to sink thousands of dollars? Yeah.
Or in my case, three times.
So that's exactly right. Right. And for ownership, it comes down, at a macro level, it comes down to utilization rates.
Yeah.
The utilization rates of cars right now is terrible. Like the utilization rate of cars, I forget what the latest numbers
are. You buy it, you drive it maybe not even that long. You drive it maybe an hour a day, and the 23 hours a day, it's sitting in a garage.
I think it's worse on average.
Yeah. It's even worse.
I think the utilization rates of cars is comparable to the utilization rate of like luxury watches or jewelry.
Yeah.
And and so you'll get to the same ownership structure.
No sense. Mm-hmm.
Like at some point, it'll be
a drain on resources, all the metals, all
the
It's a luxury item.
Yeah.
And in the future, will be.
My husband and I frequently talk about ditching our car because the number one reason we have it is to actually leave the Bay Area and go camping.
Because you live in a city, as does Phil.
I
think for city dwellers.
I live in San Francisco.
Okay.
Yeah.
A small fishing village.
City. Yeah.
But I think for people who live in urban areas, how about that?
Yeah.
This is not an uncommon idea. Most people, I would imagine most people in New York don't want to own a car. It's hideously expensive to garage it.
I mean, we do our stuff on, we do our errands on foot.
And there's mass transit. So what do you need a car for? But then, as you point out, Lisa, the rest of the country is not urbanized. And you really need.
So when it comes to mass transit, you've got New York, Chicago, a little bit of Washington, some Boston, San Francisco. That's pretty much for major cities with a good public transport network.
Yeah.
And I'm using the word good in the biggest
possible
stretch.
That's a very generous definition.
We were robbed as a country. Because if you go to Europe, as you know, you see these incredible mass transit networks, the train networks.
Well, you had them. They were just shut down in the 50s.
Yeah, we were robbed because the motor companies and the oil
companies,
the
tire companies,
conspired.
And the oil companies got together. Yeah. LA had a fantastic.
I mean, we were also bigger, right?
Yeah.
There's just much bigger distances between major cities in the U.S. than
between
in Europe.
Cities, but I mean, Los Angeles used to have the most fantastic public transport tram network, and that was all ripped out. And now, 2 hours in commuting traffic is the norm.
Yeah. But basically, there is no long-term saving the car companies because the utilization rates are going exactly against them.
Yeah.
So
just if they go autonomous and they go to fleet rentals and...
Yeah, because there'll just be far fewer cars because you're not going to be sitting at 3% utilization.
So this is maybe Tesla's... I mean, I'm sure Elon's smart enough to know this, and that's that's his opportunity.
Well, Tesla will probably succeed in that market, and the traditional car companies will... See their unit volumes.
I always thought they were basically a battery company that's using a car to promote the battery.
That's accurate.
Yeah, exactly. This is where it's going. And it's that move you were talking about, the electricity grid as being central to this. You know, it's that move from large-scale, inefficient transmission plants to everyone generates their own and an aggregate network with certain baseline stations providing the current.
You were reminding me of a vendor I interviewed at CES earlier this year. He was selling a solar panel that is probably about the size of Leo's gizmo there. Mm-hmm. And
my Surface Studio all-in-one.
Isn't that gorgeous?
Super duper.
It was a solar panel that size. And he said that his market was actually electric car owners in Silicon Valley, because he said you can just stick this thing outside for a couple hours, power it up, it can juice up your car. And this way, you're independent of the electrical grid.
I think we're one breakthrough away from this being viable. Something like a 40% efficient solar panel or a battery that can be charged quickly and is easier to make. I mean, it's field, and of course, everybody's working on this kind of innovation.
You're also going to have to train users, though. I mean, the reason gas gauges are so effective is because people think of gasoline in terms of something they're consuming.
Yeah.
And they can see how much they're consuming, and it affects their behavior.
Yeah.
And it even affects the way they think about it in terms of, am I wasting it? Am I using it correctly? Am I shopping around for the best deal? Until you can get to the point when, there's Gas Buddy. People are really weird.
Gas Buddy is an app?
Yeah, it's people are weird about how much they're paying per gallon of gas.
As they should be when gas gets.
But also logically, and the extent they're willing to drive further than the cost savings will get them to get a slightly lower price at the gas pump.
Again, weird. But you know, until people start thinking of battery power,
you see your battery go down in a Tesla. You see where your battery is. You know how many. Actually, it's
gas usage isn't linear either.
Yeah,
it isn't. Is it? No, it depends on how you step on the pedal. But I think one of the things Tesla does quite well with that big screen is give you an idea of how much power you're going to have left when you get to where you're going.
Yeah.
And it's pretty accurate. It will reroute you to chargers if you're going to need one. I think it handles that issue quite well.
Yeah.
I know where I'm sitting. Tesla did not have a very good quarter. The worst financial quarter ever. I think short-term Tesla is having trouble. But they've got
a certain amount of cash to burn. You know, they're not going to run short of funding anytime soon. The question is this a small hiatus while they get themselves sorted out?
It's all about the Model 3 and the Gigafactory. Yeah. In fact, Elon's blaming the Gigafactory and problems making batteries for the
overall. Was camped out on the roof on it a couple of weeks ago.
I know. So. They're making s'mores on the roof of the Gigafactory.
If I was to ever buy a car again, it would probably be a Model 3. I can't imagine getting anything else, but I'll probably never own one.
Yeah. But here in Petaluma, I couldn't. Not have a car. I guess I could bicycle everywhere, but it rains.
What are you in, Davis?
It'd be good for me, right? Yeah. It'd be better for me.
There's a bunch of people that are going to still have cars, whether they own them or not. Is a different. That's the ownership question, different from the who's actually going to drive it question.
Yeah.
But most of the population in the world is living in urban centers. Mm-hmm. That's what's growing. So just the sheer numbers are obviously going only in one direction, which is fewer unit sales.
Yeah.
So no future for the big.
That is a massive.
As long as you can find a way to move people around when they're differently abled or they're senior citizens or they're very small children. I mean, one of the biggest reasons to have a car is you have people that can't walk.
Mm-hmm.
But for my mom, who's 84 and got rid of her car some years ago, if she does use Uber, but if an autonomous shuttle could come to her door at her beck and call.
I have known so many senior citizens who have talked about that, who are like, I want the autonomous car where I just
praying,
tell them to go. And,
I'm not going to be able to drive in a couple of years, and I'm praying that they'll...
What are you waiting
for? Maybe a few more, but...
it's those old-timey pneumatic tubes that they used to have at banks.
That's the Hyperloop,
isn't it?
That's
the future.
That's the Futurama credit.
That's it?
You've just cited the Futurama credit.
That's right. That's where we're going.
The boring machine stuff, though, I seriously think Elon's lost the plot on this, because the idea of being able to just bore tunnels under cities might work in a few select cities, but try that in London and you're going to find yourself in a whole world of trouble.
Yeah.
It's kind of a Morlock imagery they're going on.
Yeah.
H.G. Wells, wow. What a literate crew we have here. That's Lisa Schmeiser.
Mm-hmm.
What is it called? IT Pro Today now?
Yes,
that's the new
IT
name?
Pro Today, yes.
She is... What is your the Iron Feminist on Twitter?
The Immortal Iron Feminist.
The Immortal Iron Feminist. We'll talk about it.
Taking advantage of those 50 characters in my title now.
Twitter is evolving now. You have 50 characters for your title. You have 280 characters for your tweet.
Yeah.
We'll talk a little bit about that. Phil Libin is also here. He's at All Turtles. That is a incubator for artificial...
No, I get it wrong
every time.
Studio.
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 For artificial intelligence. What is a studio?
We make stuff.
Okay. So you're not funding companies and supporting them to make stuff. You're making stuff.
Well, we do everything to make important products, which includes funding when that's necessary, but also engineering and design and marketing and everything. And we're not trying to incubators try to poop out little companies. Mm-hmm. We try to make important products. We're kind of indifferent as to whether they're freestanding companies or not.
Phil Libin, not pooping out companies.
No.
Okay. We just want to make that clear.
Yeah.
Not pooping out little companies.
There's like 50 characters.
That's your new Twitter handle. But interestingly enough, a member of Anthony Lewandowski's new Church of the Artificial Intelligence.
Yeah, no.
No. Okay. Well, we'll talk about that in a minute, too. Also hear from the Register, the king of snark himself.
I need that on my business card.
Probably snarkier people at the
Still
Register.
Have business cards.
Yes. No. I'm quite mild in some regards.
Ian Thompson. Our show today brought to you by Captera. And I love Captera because it solves a problem I have, which is people call me, mostly on the radio show, saying, I don't know, as an example, I run a dog groomer. What's the best software for running dog groomers? And I have to say, why would I know that? Now I can say go to Captera.com. What have I been doing, I guess, in the past is Googling it, and that's not a great way to find specific vertical business software. Captera is 400 categories of business software, thousands of applications. In fact, one of the fun things, even if you're not looking for business software, is just going to Capterra and looking in, you know, I mean, from bookkeeper software to bug tracking software to call recording software to chemical, childcare, chiropractic. Let's pick a weird business. I shouldn't say that because then somebody... Dance studio software. That's not a weird business. But did you know? Look at all of these. Mm-hmm. These are all programs built to run dance studios. Class Juggler. Your Virtuoso, Bookio, Sawyer, CompuDance, Dance Studio Pro, iClass Pro, Prime Time, Dance Studio Software. So first of all, you're going to get a directory of that. By the way, these directories tend to be kind of big because they have everything in there. Now you can say, well, I'm going to filter that. I'm going to make it 4 stars. It should be web-based, only 4 stars and up. And I want to take online payments, point of sale, and recital management. I don't know. I just picked some. You can filter it down to the programs that Jackrabbit Dance, the studio director, Pike 30. These are the ones that do. Then you can say, let's add that to the compare. That looks good. Dance Biz. That looks good. Our Dance Shop. I'm going to add that. And now I can compare them and look at what they do. And even better, I can look at the reviews. Hundreds of thousands of reviews by people just like you. And all of this, guess what? Free. There's no sign up. No, you don't have to give them your email. It's just a directory of great business software just for you. 260,000 ratings and reviews, thousands of applications, hundreds of categories. Capterra. CAPTERRA. Capterra.com/twit. Don't waste your precious daylight as the days get shorter, sifting through a sea of Google results when you can find the right business software and get home on time tonight. Capterra.com/twit. Get that software you need and get it for free. Well, the software is not free, but actually, in many cases, you can even say, I want a free trials. I want to see which ones have free trials. CAPTERRA.com. 3 million people, including some of the biggest companies in the world, use Capterra to find business software. Maybe you should, too. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Tech. Anthony Lewandowski is an interesting character. I think we should talk about this. He is an
interesting character that covers a multitude of sins.
And he's getting more interesting. Mm. He became a kind of a news story. He was at Google, worked at the self-driving car group there, then left Waymo to start Otto, which is the self-driving truck company, which was acquired by Uber. And then Google sued Uber, saying Anthony brought intellectual property. That lawsuit is ongoing. We're not here to talk about that because there's nothing more boring than lawsuits, frankly. But he's also done something I find strangely fascinating. He's founded a church of artificial intelligence. It's called the Way of the Future. And actually, there's a lot of people wondering, is this real? Is this a joke? What's going on? Wired interviewed him, and they said he was quite serious. Although, if you look at him with his Nike turtleneck there. That's a tracksuit.
It's a tracksuit. I would know.
And we know about Nike tracksuits. They're often used by religious cults.
I was just thinking the Heaven's Gate people.
Yeah. So do you think there's tongue-in-cheek here or what? He calls the Way of the Future, they call it the next act for the Silicon Valley robotics wunderkind. He filed papers in May with the IRS. He is the leader of the religion, self-styled dean, just like the dean of Canterbury Cathedral, right?
Yes, yeah. And the dean at Canterbury Cathedral probably has slightly more in the way of followers than this.
He's not wearing Nike tracksuits.
It's not a popularity contest.
Generally, religions tend to be thought of
that's interesting. I don't know. It's a non-profit.
He's also not clear on what the word dean means.
Well, the boss, the head honcho.
But also, you've got weird rules about religion.
Deans aren't actually the boss of anything.
Well, what is the dean? They call the Canterbury...
No, the dean's not the boss.
He's not the dean is the guy Archbishop.
Who gets, the dean is the person that gets stuff done. The Archbishop is the guy that wears the stupid hat.
In no context does the word dean mean the person like in charge of the whole organization.
No, it's this number two. Well, who's in charge? Whopper is in charge. They some giant computer somewhere is in charge.
Is that a War Games reference?
Yes.
Very good. Nice. For somebody not born here. The documents... No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
No, it's true.
Immigrants.
It's funny because it's true.
They get the job done.
Oh,
hey, I watched War Games when it came out in the cinema. I loved that
film. Yeah, great movie. Mm-hmm. I interviewed the director some years ago on the new screen, on the old screensavers, and it was really fun to talk to him.
We still have the War Games poster
John,
in the
John
offices.
Badham? Is that what his name was? I think it was. WOTF, the Way of the Future, that's the name of this religion, will focus on, quote, the realization, acceptance, and worship of a godhead based on artificial intelligence developed through computer hardware and software. They're going to fund
research.
What does
God need with a spaceship is all I can think of.
It will seek to build working relationships with AI industry leaders. Have they contacted you? You're an AI industry leader, Phil.
They haven't. Apparently, no. I'm not a leader not. Enough.
And they're going to target AI professionals and laypersons who are interested in the worship of a godhead based on AI. This could be...
If there's nothing else I learned from college, it's to not take people who say the word godhead seriously. That is a red flag. You see the word godhead, you know that's not a serious person.
It sounds a little bit like the Church of the Subgenius, right? J.R. Bob Dobbs and Slackham, which is, of course, was a mock religion. That took off.
Yeah, and gave us Slack.
And gave us Slack. Do you think Slack, the program, is named after Slack from Church of Subgenius?
It's got to be.
Wow, I didn't think of that. So is Anthony Lewandowski creating a new J.R. Bob Dobbs? And he's the dean? Is he serious?
Well, he's got this thing he says in the article where he's like, well, clearly AIs are going to take over, so I want to be in on the ground floor as I want to be the collaborator
so that I'm not
lined up against the wall when they...
Yeah, he doesn't want the AIs to think he's trying to take over.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's why he's just
the dean.
He's a facilitator.
Got it.
This is a dude who watched Avengers Age of Ultron and was like, that Ultron, I feel like he's got a business plan that can work. So I'm going to back him.
It's weird. When you read the manifesto, it comes across as almost plausible in a way that, you know, this is coming and we should be looking for ways to actually do this more safely. But I'm sorry, with the timing of this and the way it's all done, I can't help thinking he's pulling a Hubbard. And, you know, this is going to be the first Scientologist of the technology movement.
Or it's a joke and he has a lot of free time. Or,
well,
or he's sincere. He's also, there's three possibilities.
But the timing of this in relation to the court case is interesting.
That thing's going to drag on. He's got to do something in the meantime, right? He's obviously not hireable at this point. Right? He says the idea needs to spread before the technology. The church is how we spread the word, the gospel. If you believe it, then start a conversation with someone else and help them understand the same things. Now, agreed with when I read this, Phil. He says... The change is coming, a change that will transform every aspect of human existence, disrupting employment, leisure, religion, the economy, and possibly decide our very survival as a species. Yep. Quote, if you ask people whether a computer can be smarter than a human, 99.9% will say science fiction. Actually, it's inevitable. It's guaranteed to happen. Is that true?
99.9% will say science fiction. That seems like an awfully precise number. It also feels...
Science fiction, will a computer ever be as smart as a human?
Oh, undoubtedly.
Undoubtedly.
Well, obviously.
Obviously.
I'm clearly in the... I want to figure out, how are you defining smart? Are you defining it as the ability to synthesize
in every possible way?
In creativity, adaptability?
Yes.
Will there be anything? Will there be any single thing that humans can do better than computers?
Tennis.
No.
No. But I guess
not a single thing.
Are they going to teach themselves that, or are we going to have to teach them to think like us, or will they find a way to eventually process so that it's so much further that we can't comprehend?
Look at AlphaGo. It's a really good template for this. AlphaGo is the Go playing computer that Google developed. And when we talk about Deep Blue, Deep Blue was taught to play chess, not just given the rules, but given ways to weigh chess. And all chess programs work like this, way to weigh positions and say who's winning and go for the better position. AlphaGo, they said, here's the rules of Go. Just play it. It played millions of games and taught itself.
Yeah.
And in fact, interestingly, I think, came up with a way to play that isn't that master Go players say, you know, this is beautiful. This is artistic. This, when you see a machine play chess, most chess players would agree. It's you can tell it's a machine. It's not human. It's mechanical. It's not art. But apparently, and I'm not a good enough Go player to judge this, but apparently AlphaGo plays in an artistic fashion that is even innovative, that master Go players, like the world champion that it beat last year or earlier this year, I guess, say this is giving us new ideas for how to play Go. So there's your answer. Yeah. You can have machines that learn, at least in some constrained environments.
I mean, Lou
so are you in the? So I'm going to put you on the spot, Lisa.
Okay.
Ian says yes,
but not as soon as people think. But yes.
Eventually,
yeah.
Phil says yes, probably agrees sooner or later. That's two out of two.
Teach him how to think, and then the answer is probably yes.
Yes, and I say yes, so it's 100%. 100% of people. Yeah. Don't believe it's science fiction, but think it's inevitable.
I mean,
so
look,
the quote is the opposite of what he said.
Yeah. How about in the studio audience? Mm-hmm. Anybody, let's put it this way. Anybody doesn't think that can we give it a time frame the next couple of hundred years?
Yeah.
We'll give it a long time frame that a machine can't be developed that will be smarter than a human. Anybody think that won't happen? Zero hands.
Okay.
Will it be smarter than an octopus? Might actually be the real question.
Octopus.
Oh, those things
really
are cunning.
Smart.
But yes.
They're really smart.
Yeah, I mean, look at how mollusks learn and think and adapt.
I know.
Especially
I saw Finding
Nemo.
That thing, smart.
It's interesting.
Well, Lewandowski's not wrong in that there's a link between religious development and communications technologies. And, you know, you're talking, you're reading
quotes.
Wait a minute.
You better break that one down.
Okay.
There's a link.
Absolutely. Yeah, the conception of divinity tends to change as communication technologies change and people move. I mean, you take a look at the types of mythologies and gods that oral cultures define, and then you take a look at how the concept of divinity shifts once there's written language, and then you take a look at how there were cultural shifts in religion again once Gutenberg hit the scene with printing presses and movable type. There's a sociological relationship between the way religions develop and the way we conceive of God. And
because of our changing communications.
Yeah, because what you do is you go from having, say, oral transmission of information, which is very specific and very different and very time dependent, to something where it's written down and the information is therefore freed from time. Mm-hmm. And that actually expands the definition of divinity for people, too, because now they're their divine entity is uncoupled from time. And then when you get to printing presses and ubiquity of communications technologies, the definition of God expands. What's one step ahead of that?
What has the internet done to our definition of God?
It's probably turned it more into, it's moved towards AI, to be frank, and it started in the 90s because when the idea of having disintermediated communication that was instantaneous and globe spanning, that transcended.
That's godlike.
That transcended the physical limitations of the print.
Of the physical world.
I don't think it's coincidental. I think it's reflective that you saw some ripples through different flavors of Christianity that arose in response to this.
Speaking as someone who's sort of baptized and confirmed as a Protestant in the Church of England, mm-hmm. Gutenberg was fundamental to that because up until this point, there were very few Bibles. They were written in Latin. Mm-hmm. It was actively illegal to do an English language version of the Bible because people didn't want them reading and going, this is so full of... But, when Gutenberg came along...
That was kind of coincident with Luther.
Yeah.
Martin Luther. Mm-hmm.
Well, Luther kicked off Protestantism.
50 years later that the 95 Theses were on the...
Yeah.
Put up
but
on the church.
But they spread around a lot faster thanks to the printing press. And you're seeing the effect of the internet on religions now. The Mormons, the LDS, has a huge problem with the internet. They are losing followers hand over fist because people are actually reading what these, the history of the church and saying, well, look, you're all lovely people, but this is just bonkers. Yeah. You know, we're all going to have a planet to ourselves when we die. Mm-hmm. And, Joseph Smith got these gold books.
I think that
books.
Actually the Broadway play Book of Mormon has done more than the internet to break down the and I don't want to diss the Mormon religion. I know many Mormons who are devout and actually good people.
Oh no, I mean this is the dichotomy is they're all marvelous people, but they just believe something which is utterly bonkers.
Well, to you,
I think this is the.
Do you believe in the Trinity?
Nope.
Okay, good.
No, give me some proof. I'm open to the idea.
Every religion has some interesting suppositions.
I'm open to the idea of a God, but the idea that there is one book which contains the perfect explanation of what that is.
Let me continue on what Lisa is saying because it's kind of interesting. Do you think so? Religion obviously fills a human need of some sort because as long as they've been humans, we've had these beliefs. Mm-hmm. So there is some need for this, whether it's
you want explanations for things that make no sense. You want to believe that you're not alone in the universe, and you want a supportive community that you know that you belong to, and there are all sorts of reciprocal give and take relationships.
And there's an evolutionary advantage in it.
Yeah.
So in the and it, and it, I will accept your contention that the means of communications has changed how mm-hmm. we hold religion. I think that's mm-hmm. very interesting.
It changes how we conceive of the divine too.
Very interesting. Yeah. Does it make sense then that the internet that we'll look back in 100 years and say the internet era mm-hmm. created a new form of divinity? Artificial intelligence? Is that? I don't think that's
unreasonable. Well, it created a new conception of divinity, which is that it's a divinity that can process information and come up with things that are beyond our comprehension.
You wouldn't say that yeah. AI created the world. Most religions have a creation myth.
It understands it.
What's the creation myth in the AI religion?
So here's the problem with this stupid church.
Let's
call it like it is. I agree.
It's because it leads to this kind of discussion it combines whether or not AI is relevant or interesting for religion is, that's a topic that we can talk about. What religion is not is useful and interesting for AI. This is setting AI back. What the industry doesn't need is another crackpot using scary sounding words to try to alienate normal people and make this seem like something other.
But there are some, I agree with you. Yeah, using the word God and so forth.
Or church, or dean, or pretending that this is what I think people need, what society needs in order to make peace with AI, have it develop the way that it should develop, that we want it to develop, is actually to demystify it, to stop treating it like some magical, mysterious sci-fi thing.
Yeah.
It's actually completely understandable, and it's completely understandable by normal people. And casting, because it's just numbers. It's just math. There's nothing like magical or mystical about it.
It feels mystical, though. It feels like there's an inflection point, for instance, in AlphaGo, where it goes from just being a mechanistic system, a Turing machine or von Neumann machine that is doing deterministic calculations, to something. There is a point at which it has played enough games that it feels like, and maybe this is very smushy human feelings, but it feels like it's crossed into a new realm.
But
it's no longer
one of
a
the
Turing
biggest
machine.
One of the biggest dangers in society over the next few decades is tech fear, science fear.
Yes, right?
People
absolutely.
Being afraid of technology and science and panicking about it, and that has the potential to do vast damage to billions of people.
We already seen it happen.
And this
with vaccine
church. Yeah. Makes that problem worse.
All right, I agree with you.
Because it's somebody coming up and using mystical sounding language and talking about the Godhead and AI. And it's just
too much hand waving.
It's meant to be not understandable. It's this language is meant to make people say, "Oh, we want to worship this. We don't need to understand it. We can't control it. It's outside of human comprehension."
That's actually a critical facet of most religions, isn't it? Yeah, is there a behind the curtain that you aren't expected to understand?
Right. It's much more important that people feel that they actually do understand and do control and can influence the evolution and behavior of this thing. I think this is setting it back. Now, I think this is not a serious person. The effort is not going to be taken seriously.
Yeah. Okay.
Good. He's trying to position people as pets. And
you've demolished it. It's over.
I think this actually points to kind of an attitude problem that's pervasive through Silicon Valley, which is the idea that people who work in tech are some sort of anointed or priestly caste.
Yeah.
And everybody else.
Or that they're annoying douchebags, which many of us are.
potato, potato.
Yeah. And,
but what he's doing here is he's trying to make the argument that either you can be part of the winning technology priestly caste, or you can be a pet or livestock.
Stephen Hawking says the development of full artificial intelligence could spell the end of the human race. True or false?
False flag operation. Stephen Hawking's been fully AI for decades. He's just trying to make us believe that that's not
Pay
the
no
case.
Pay no attention to the man behind the pointing stick. Oh, that's interesting. How about, but Elon says the same thing? There are a number of people who say, we were worried about AI.
Please. I'm just saying, I mean, I know Elon Musk reads Ian Banks because he names his spaceships after it. And the Ian M. Banks culture series is the best possible way for how AI would work out. Benevolent gods, keeping things running, making sure of human things. I don't think it's going to particularly work out like that. I think it's going to work out in a whole multiplicity of ways because this is why this church is so stupid. The Chinese are working on AI. Individual companies within China and the US are working on AI. All around the world, people are working on AI systems. We're going to get a multiplicity of them, and we don't know how it's going to work out. If people keep a firm grip on it, then fine. But, there's going to be a lot of mistakes
along
the way.
Last month, Vladimir Putin said that the nation that leads in AI will, quote, be the ruler of the world, to which Elon responded, it begins. China, Russia, soon all countries with strong computer science. Competition for AI superiority at a national level will most likely cause World War III? Is that techno panic? I think that's probably the definition of techno panic.
I think people misinterpret a lot of what Elon says. I don't think that Elon is saying this stuff to be particularly alarming.
It won't
or pessimistic.
Be a war like World War II was. It will be a competition, though, between we're seeing it already between these big nations.
Yeah, I kind of think that national boundaries are not going to be as relevant in the future as they were in the past.
That's one thing that happens with AI.
Just the question is what kind of cultural biases will be. Will cause AIs to differentiate because you're talking about companies.
Will
that
a Chinese
countries
AI
that have very distinct
act differently than an American AI or a Russian AI?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the because that's what
initially.
I'd be interested in seeing is how these and will they moderate their behavior when they run into each other? Will they learn from each other? Will they actually come up with their own set of biases that we can't anticipate?
When is this going to happen, Phil? I just want to know if I'll be around to see this.
Well, it's happening, and it looks a lot less mysterious than. Then I think people want to dramatize it.
Because you work in it.
I work in it.
You are less mystical about it and less perturbed about it,
We do practical AI. So lots of
and
products.
It's not general AI, probably, right?
I don't think there's any such thing as general AI.
There's no general intelligence.
Yeah, I think everything we do is
domain-specific.
But it's meant to be better than people.
Right.
Like, everything I work on starts out being vastly better than a human could be at its narrow job.
Right. Paperclip manufacturer.
And then it doesn't even pretend to be intelligent in any other aspect.
Yeah. Is this company nuts? Boston Dynamics. Google used to own them. They sold them off.
Yeah.
They now have a new dog. It's called the Spot Mini. I just want you to...
That thing's awesome.
Really?
Yeah.
Here it comes.
At least they're not kicking it anymore.
Yeah, that was kind of obsessive.
Oh, don't look at me. Don't look at me like that. Okay, now there I am anthropomorphizing it. It's not really.
Aww.
In fact, aren't they kind of anthropomorphizing it, or at least animalizing
children can have pets.
Yeah, but you see, they've miniaturized that. You know, they've had something similar to Spot for years now.
Pet.
And what
you
they've
can
basically
cover it
done.
Fur. I mean, look, you can hang
actually,
something.
Sony, believe it or not, is bringing back the iBo.
Oh, I had the first gen iBo.
Did you?
No, I did.
Why is that not a surprise?
Sony are bringing back the iBo with a hefty monthly charge, and you can't jailbreak it.
I didn't
What's the point?
It's a monthly charge. It was released in Japan a couple of weeks ago.
I love iBo.
It has OLED eyes that allow for nuanced expressions. Fisheye cameras see and recognize individual faces.
Aww.
It's got actuators that allow the body to move smoothly along 22 axes.
More than I got.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have. I have maybe five.
Sorry,
yeah.
I can mount a laser on its head, I'm not interested.
Yeah.
You know,
here is an Engadget video of iBo.
You both know that you can put a laser on a normal dog. You don't need an AI dog for that.
Yeah, I know, but
sharks would be the best with lasers.
Yeah.
We were just discussing that sharks are freaking lasers.
It's like an ill-tempered bass. Maybe.
iBo does have its ball again. Remember that was one of the features of iBo. Did you ever have the ball and have it play fetch?
Of course,
and all that?
Yeah.
Really? Did you buy it as a curiosity or as a toy, or what were you thinking? Because it was thousands of dollars.
It was thousands of dollars. I signed a contract with a universe that required me to buy every consumer robot ever made.
I still have that contract.
Yeah.
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 I signed it in blood, so I can't stop.
Can't get out of it.
Yeah. I'm getting the Jibo, which is the robot that sits on a table and looks around like this someday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's from Cynthia Brazil, though, who is a really legitimate robotics researcher from MIT.
Sitting at a table and looking around is pretty much my signature move.
It has OLED eyes. It has actually a screen face, take pictures and talk with you. And then we've actually had an advertiser called Curry, which is coming out in the next few months. I'm looking forward to getting our Curry. That one wanders around. It's like an iBo without legs. It just rolls.
This stuff is fascinating. Like it really...
But it isn't artificial intelligence in any respect.
Well, nothing is artificial intelligence and kind of everything is. Like when you get into the technology, there isn't a specific bucket of things that's like, this is AI. It's we use the word in a design context. What products feel intelligent? What does it take to make something feel smart?
Yeah.
Mm. And what does it take to make a product, to design a product that feels like it's getting smarter, that it's learning? Like it's a design essence. I don't care so much about the back end technology, the algorithms. Those will change. It's the design of intelligence. That's the super interesting thing for me.
Well, how about, if not back ends, how about back flips? This is another Boston Robotics computer.
Oh, I love this video.
This thing is great.
That can jump.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a humanoid computer.
Yeah. Mm.
It's jumping onto boxes, and in a moment, it's going to flip and do a backflip off a box here. Let's see. Up. And it's better than I certainly couldn't do any of this. Whoa! It did a perfect plant, and then it raises its arms.
It's a lovely bit of PR, but
it's stuck the landing.
Yeah, it kind of glosses over some major failings in the Atlas design that they've got there. Mm-hmm. Have you ever watched this thing try and walk across rubble? It's hilariously bad at it. Yeah.
It's funny, but that's a hard thing to do. I think
so stuntmen still have their jobs for another 20 years.
I like
what
Phil said, which is that it won't be general intelligence. It'll be domain-specific and very narrow.
Well, isn't that the definition that of any good product is that it's designed to do something in a way that, you don't have to think about it while you're using it.
That's scary.
There is a design change that's coming, and I actually think the most important thing in the medium term is the iPhone X and the face recognition stuff.
Whoa, okay. Mm-hmm. The iPhone X.
Yeah. I used to say X until someone said I was an idiot for saying X. It's clearly, it's definitively the 10.
Apple opened that can of worms. It's an X.
Definitively, yeah.
Is it Roman numeral 10, I guess?
Had they wanted that to be unambiguous, there's a way they could have made it unambiguous.
A 1 and a 0.
Yeah. So what's going to start happening, up to now, all technology, it's always been the human's job to understand the product. Mm-hmm. And the flip that's happening now is it's going to be the technology's job to understand people.
Yeah.
And the looking at your face and seeing what your expressions are and when you're confused and when you're happy and when you're frustrated, like that's a big part of it.
Yeah.
What we're seeing now is we're the beginning of a decade of a total redesign of every single product in the world because they're all going to go towards understanding users instead of the other way around.
Isn't that what we always had hoped for? That was always the goal. And I remember really talking about this in the early days of computing, which is that you wanted a computer program to adapt to you, not vice versa. And yet every computer, every bit of software we've had until very recently, you had to adapt
it isn't even adapt. It's really see. Like when you're talking to a human or even when you're interacting with like a pet dog, like what dogs are really good at, the single evolutionary trick of dogs, right, is that they look at human faces and they understand human emotion better than humans do, better than anything in the world, and only for humans. Like, they don't understand dog emotions by looking at other dogs, but they understand humans. Yeah, like, this is what dogs do. That's their shtick. That's why they're dogs.
That's what we bred them for.
Yeah.
And
do they really understand human emotions or just look like they do?
So that's a really interesting question, right? Because at some level, they understand human emotion much better than a human does, but at a different level, it's obviously they couldn't explain it to you.
They don't know what's going on.
Well, they do know.
But they know you're angry.
They can smell. The smelling helps, too, because they can actually detect hormonal shifts
It's all
everything.
In.
Yeah, they're
sensing machines designed for a certain...
But this is what we're going to see with technology. Like, up to now, basically no product has ever seen the user. Like a product has never seen you, has never tried to understand you, has never actually tried to engage in the way that a person or even a dog would.
Right.
And now we're just the beginning of that. And 10 years from now, most mainstream products are going to have this kind of conversational and emotional intelligence about how they're interacting with people. And that's profound. This is full employment for every UX designer, every AI person. Every cognitive scientist for the next few decades.
Called Lighthouse Effect. There's one right behind me that has a time of flight 3D sensor.
Mm-hmm.
It has a camera. It has infrared. But what it does is interesting because you can make natural language queries of it. It can distinguish pets and humans. So you can have queries like, show me when a pet comes into without a human. Or show me when a pet and a human come in. Show me when a human comes in after 2 in the afternoon. And it's very accurate. That's what you're talking about.
More than that, right? Just any time.
Show me when an unhappy human comes
in. Well, it would be nice, for example, if Siri could pick up your tone of voice.
Yeah. Oh, God, I dread that day. That's probably not that hard, though, right?
Well, in theory, they should be able to pick up your tone of voice.
We see emotional analysis of Twitter, of tweets, right? Yeah.
I think it's really real-time user experiences that adapt in real time based on your
micro-emotional state. Phil. Perhaps you'd like to take a chill pill before we speak.
Well, so potentially, right? Yeah. But other things as well. So, like, you could have a room, for example, a conference room, that is aware of the emotional and cognitive content of the conversations that are being held in it and responds in real time to those conversations in a way to try to improve their quality.
I'm going to turn the lights down now because it's getting a little heavy.
I would design it with a slightly less creepy voice.
Darn it, there goes that job. Yeah.
So who sets the goals for the room? Who sets the goals for the room and decides on that, though? I mean, this is...
That's a good question. Yeah. So initially, me. Mm-hmm. In the medium term, me. you know, longer than that, it'll probably machine learn based on desired outcomes, right? So, for example,
so that's what you would at a higher level, you would set an outcome.
Yeah,
instead of saying what you want the room to do, you'd say, "Look, I'd like everybody to be able to have a meeting where we get stuff done and any conflict is reduced." Mm-hmm. And the machine says, "Well, it turns out
conflict is escalated depending on maybe sometimes you want more conflict depending on the outcome you want."
Right.
So measure the outcome
and
you want.
And the software can learn. Well, when I make the lights a little redder, we get more conflict.
Or a scenario for like family holiday get-togethers.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to talk about family holiday get-togethers in just a second because apparently there are people who know.
Yeah.
About what you're doing this holiday season.
Flawed. If it's the research I'm thinking of, then we could have a humding of an argument on this one.
Oh, good. I look forward to that. But first, a word from our sponsor. This is more than a sponsor. We could practically put at the end of every show, Leo Laporte's Wardrobe by Scott E. Vest.
I'm a big fan of Scott E. Vest.
I travel. It's my travel wear. Mm-hmm. Even down to my underwear. They make actually Scott E. Vest underwear that has a pocket because all Scott E. Vest has a pocket.
No, I have a set. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. It's you can wash it out in the sink and dry it. It's really anyway. Scott E. Vest isn't really about underwear so much as it really started with vests, with jackets. Photographers love them. I'm sure Mike, you wear quite a few Scott E. Vest because they have my Scott E. Vest has I think 27 pockets.
A lot of police like them as well for exactly that reason.
It's like a tactical jacket, and you can put stuff in them.
They make my favorite hat.
I don't have a Scott E. Vest hat.
Yeah, they have a really nice baseball cap, which is like perfect.
Oh yeah, it's got a little pouch in it. Yeah,
it's got like two pockets. Yeah, and it's got like no logos. It's great.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I don't like wearing people's logos, but look at this. Here's an image on the left there. You can see, actually, they have this great X-ray feature on the site, Scott E. Vest, scottevest.com/twit, where you can hover your mouse over the vest, the jacket, the shirt. They even have dresses for women. And see what the pockets, where the pockets are.
I kind of want that, I want the design with the stuff printed. Like, I would wear that. Well, it had those graphics.
Yeah, so actually, showing muggers.
I would wear which one that. You would like to say.
I want that.
A diagram.
I want that exact one with the graphics on it.
I love it. They call it Scott, who's great. Scott Jordan calls it the personal area network. It has that you can run wires. You could, so for instance, have an iPhone in your iPhone pocket, and then you see how the headphones come out of it, and they go through conduits in the jacket so they appear at your ears, and so your wires never get tangled and never get lost. When you get to the airport and you want to go through security, you just take off the vest, put it on the belt. If you ever run out of room in your luggage, like they say, oh, sir, you're a kilogram over. Mm-hmm. Hey, boy, having 27 pockets, I stuff my lenses in there, my camera in there. Sure, you look like the Michelin man, but they let you through. They don't weigh you. And then yet. By the way, they have an RFID blocking pocket, which is very important if you're traveling. You can put your passport in there, and nobody can read your passport or skim your credit card. It blocks the 13.56 megahertz frequencies. That's how specific it is. The weight management system means you can balance it all out so you don't look like the Michelin man, unless you put like 20 lenses in your pockets. Then it's going
to
be kind of...
I feel like I need to say the Michelin man looks good.
I think he looks great. Nothing wrong with that. They've got jackets. They've got shirts. They've got pants. They've got dresses. They've got boxer shorts. I own and wear them all. You should see my closet. It's just all Scott E. Vest. Oh, I love this. This is the one I wore to France, the one with the red piping. I love that jacket, and it's kind of stylish. Lisa wears the Scott E. Vest fleeces. Actually, we have Twit fleeces we all wear.
Ooh, do you?
The RFID travel vest, the fleece jacket 8.0, the Scott E. Vest jacket for women, which is really nice. It's heavily weighted fleece, so it keeps you warm. 21 pockets, but if you have to cool off, removable sleeves. The Quest vest, get this.
Oh, I like that trench.
Isn't that nice?
I have a girlfriend who has that.
Yeah, I do too. I love that.
Yeah.
The Quest vest has 42 pockets and is Teflon treated for water and stain resistant. Mm-hmm. Actually, there are so many pockets, I lose things in the pockets, and that's the other sponsor, Tracker, is very helpful. I literally, if you're doing any traveling, this is the best apparel you could pack. Johnny Jett, our travel guy, loves Scott E. Vest. He uses their vests to do things like hide money. Forget the money belt. You need a Scott E. Vest.
Diamonds.
Scott E. Vest has a great deal right now for Twit fans. A private opportunity to their huge Cyber Monday sale. It's coming up a week from Monday, a week from tomorrow, but you can get in now. And for a limited time, save 30% on almost everything by going to scottyvest.com/twit and use the promo code CyberTwit. It's not Cyber Monday, it's CyberTwit. And you'll get an extra 30% off. Scotty Vest, great gifts for you and your loved ones. 2-year manufacturer guarantee and 30% off if you use the promo code CyberTwit. scottyvest.com/twit. I think we're all Scotty Vest users. That's the fun thing about an advertiser.
They just don't have a pocket label for snacks, though, and that's an unforgivable omission in my world.
They have a water bottle pocket. Mm. You know, I like they have a key fob, which I always attach my keys to.
Well, I guess it's where you stick your Soylent.
Yeah. It could be, oh, I have carried Soylent in my Scotty Vest, actually.
Can you get it through customs?
Soylent, they don't bother you.
Okay. Mm.
I just say, this is my magic food. No, I've never had problems with Soylent. That's an interesting question.
Trying to get Marmite through customs is a nightmare. I went Marmite for explosives last time.
Really?
Yeah. No, I came through LAX and a British journo I'd met at Adobe Max had brought me over a couple of jars.
Why would smuggling Marmite be an issue?
Well, Marmite actually is an explosive.
Ah, please, it's explosive on your taste buds.
Oh, it's delicious, yeah. I know.
Oh, I was going to say.
You guys are so weird. It's a byproduct of beer production. It's yeast.
Mixed with vegetable
and the beer
extract.
Makers in Britain said, what can we do with this? Oh, let's pretend it's good.
Oh, please,
Leo, all modern civilization is a byproduct of beer production.
Actually, yeah, there is that.
It all started in Egypt many, many years ago. So we like the iPhone X. Of course, the rumor, and by the way, so does the public. It seems to be selling quite well, at least as best we can see. The iPhone 8 actually sold all right, the iPhone 8 Plus.
That's a disappointing early sales.
Well, the 8, the little one, didn't sell that well. The iPhone 8 Plus sold okay, surprisingly well, given that in a month you wouldn't be able to get an iPhone 10. But this is, of course, the iPhone most people want. And what one lesson Apple's learned is, oh, go ahead and charge a lot. Mm-hmm. Nobody seems to mind the $1,000 price tag. We thought that was a line too far that couldn't
people
be crossed.
People aren't buying cars, so they have money to buy phones.
Yeah. And now the question, and Ming-Chi Kuo, of course, the supply chain analyst from KGI Securities, he says there will be next time, late 2018, as usual, a year from now, 3 iPhones with the iPhone X form factor. But interestingly, 2 with OLEDs and 1 inexpensive one. So there'll be a 6.1-inch model. And that'll have a lower-resolution LCD screen and then a giant. And I think everybody who has an iPhone X, well, not everybody, but many who have an iPhone X would like this 6.5-inch iPhone X.
Yes, please.
Right?
Yes, please.
Although I love the size, but I think a little bigger might not be so bad. And a 5.8-inch, which is a little smaller than this
And
one.
It's all going to go to face stuff. This is
And it will be no more home button. That makes sense. You can't keep doing that old. It's all new UI.
The emotion detection on the face stuff is far more important than unlocking your phone, and it's going to power everything.
So you got to tell me about that. You started talking about that. So the iPhone's going to know when I'm happy or sad?
Well, when you've understood something, what you're looking at, where your attention is, like that.
Is it going to sell that information to third parties?
Apple has put out pretty strict guidelines for what apps that use those APIs are allowed to do, and I think they're explicitly not allowed to actually do it for any kind of targeted advertising or analytics.
Because you could do heat mapping, you could do all sorts.
So that's all stuff that's got to get worked out, and it's obviously super easy to see the super creepy ways that this could go, and it's up to all of us to not have it go that way.
Right.
But the idea that every product is going to know what when you've understood something and when you haven't, it's deep. Like it's a big thing.
Oh, Scott Jordan's in the chat room. Hi, Scott.
Scott, can you make me one that has all the printing on it? I totally want
that. I believe that would be a bestseller.
I want
The X-ray is on the outside, so this is where my glass.
Yeah,
because I have to say,
I want the white with the things printed on it, just like it looks on the side. I just want that for real. I would
that
wear that all the time.
That is so chic. Yeah. It just is one of those things where it goes past nerd.
I think
the way
designed
back
the next Scott Evans.
I don't know someone who brought him, that you're basically showing the mugger where to go. So you know.
So if this is the new UI, the new way of being, obviously iPad's got to go that way too, right? I would wait to buy an iPad until the spring because that would be an awesome iPad. An iPhone X-sized iPad?
How does it handle with iPads? They're often communal machines, especially in families with small kids. So
that's a big problem.
Well, I was going to say, if we're moving to a facial recognition system, how does it handle multi-use?
I guess you could.
Yeah, for things like tablets. Could
couldn't you?
You
could say, oh, I see it's Lisa using it today.
Or I see, it's your daughter.
You can't do it right now, and I don't know why not. I don't think that would be a hard thing to do.
You can certainly do it with Google home products at the moment.
Yeah. With voice.
Yeah, they were saying you can actually... Yeah. Mm-hmm. They can differentiate between different accents within the house and then tailor their... Yeah.
You can have different Google accounts. So when you use it, it puts Ian's Google account. When your wife uses it, puts her Google account on there. Right now with Amazon Echo, you have to explicitly say switch to my wife's
It's coming
account.
To Amazon as well, and this is the next logical step. And you're right, Faces is the next logical step.
No reason not.
From
you could do it with fingerprint now.
It'll be interesting with Faces just because I know there's age restrict. There's often age considerations. If you have a small child, though, children's faces change a lot over the course
Apple
of a decade.
Apple says that. In fact, we've seen spoofing the iPhone 10 Face ID with young people. There's a video of a mom and her 10-year-old.
Yeah.
And they look enough alike. And the 10-year-old's face is not fully formed yet. And so as a result, he can unlock her phone. We've seen that.
We've also seen it with 3D printed masks.
That's weird, though. You're not going to... It took them 5 minutes to scan the person's face, the scanner. Then they had to print out a 3D printed model.
If there's not already a subreddit devoted to it, there will be by like the end of today, though. True. I guarantee you that.
I mean, Steve Gibson, our security guy, said, I will not use Face ID on the iPhone 10. He said, I do not trust it. By the way, I brought you a bottle of Marmite.
Oh, you stuff.
I smuggled it into the country. get this man some toast and eggs.
I'll open it later.
Steve Gibson said, I think, like I got to say, I love Steve. Sometimes a little tinfoil hat. Because he's a security guy. He knows the risks. But he says, I will never use Face ID. I do not trust it. I will use the password on my iPhone 10. He did order an iPhone 10. Is that...
Well, I'm just saying that with a lot of computing, and especially in a home context, and especially as you shift to smart home...
I love
home,
that idea.
One of the challenges that you're going to have to be able to... Is to be able to switch between different users in a way that's still context and user appropriate, so that I can do things like order off of Amazon Prime, but my daughter can't decide to spite order the Barbie Dream House because I said no or
Apple
something like
may
that.
Never
but
do
she
that
can still access
phone,
it for something
but
else.
But I totally think they have to do it on an iPad.
Yeah.
And wouldn't that be awesome? You pick up the iPad and it says, oh, configure this for your 12-year-old. Oh, configure this for mom. That would be a great product.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe this is just because I don't have a human family to care about. But,
I enjoy the air quotes.
What kind of
honestly,
family do you have to care about?
Honestly, I think the unlocking your device is literally the least interesting thing.
No, it's the
about
context.
The space
no,
stuff.
I like that. Although that's what everybody's using right now.
For now, yeah, exactly.
I think that actually is very. Very
I'm going to be curious to see, as someone who doesn't have any Internet of Things devices in the house, quite deliberately, quite how this is going to affect those people that don't buy into the ecosystem.
Oh yeah.
And at what point it's going to become so inconvenient not to use this? You basically
well, look at
have
how
to.
Amazon structures their entire channel because they've already demonstrated, for example, it's good to be a Whole Foods customer this month because Amazon's knocked down prices.
Yeah.
They've started doing their stuff in stores. They've already changed shopper behaviors in several fundamental ways over the last decade. They're going to start tying in a lot of behavior incentives for you to have them in the house with the speakers constantly, accessible. And making them your first line of inquiry. There's going to be a strong financial incentive attached to
it. What happens to people who say today, I'm not going to use the internet, it's too much, and the internet is very much an intrusion.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
It's very hard to be private on the internet.
Well, you can even take it off the internet, for example. How about grocery store cards? Because
I won't use.
People who opt out of grocery store loyalty programs can pay up to 30% more than people who are like, yes, I am totally fine with this corporation collecting data on everything I sell, on everything I buy, and selling it to every party. I'm totally fine with my insurer being able to subpoena that information and use it against me, as has happened.
Yeah,
has it happened?
Yes,
because I always thought that was a straw man. So that
because
actually
I would,
has
because
happened.
I would like to be able to buy my Campbell's soup too for $5 instead of paying $3 a piece.
That's very high in sodium. You probably shouldn't be. We can't give you insurance.
I'm just saying that people tend to respond to what they see as a perceived value or perceived discount. There are studies that show that if you offer free shipping, people will pay more. People will buy more on average in a shopping cart because in their brain, they're like, oh, free shipping. I save money. Therefore, I'm free to spend it someplace else. And
Amazon Prime is all about that.
Yeah, exactly. And Amazon will just take it further and say, you know what? Prime membership will be lower on an annual basis if you buy this $150 appliance once. And someone's like, oh, that amortizes over 3 years. And then they don't realize all
Amazon's
of the different behaviors
gonna totally
that they'll be habituated to over that
time. There's no doubt in my mind. And in fact, actually, Amazon is now entering Whole Foods.
Enjoy Synapse's correction on where I can get the soup for cheaper.
Yes, by the way, the Dollar Tree, it's only a dollar at the Dollar Tree. You can get some nice. Yeah. And they're not tracking you. Because nobody wants Dollar Tree shoppers. They're just no good.
Yeah, but I'm sorry. American canned soup is so loaded full of sugar and salt, I wouldn't even let that anywhere near my lips in the first place.
Eat this, my friend. There's no excuse at all. I'm sorry. Say Marmite's healthy? Full of vitamin B.
Two slices of that will give someone, if you're planning on having kids, two slices of Marmite toast, all the folic acid you will need for the day.
Oh, folic acid is very important.
B12, it's vegetarian.
Before I get pregnant, I'm going to start liking Marmite.
What's in that?
It's basically brewer's yeast and flavorings.
Would you like to smell it?
No, I've had lots of Marmite.
Oh, you like it. That's right.
I like it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, it's...
I always assumed it was petroleum based, but
this is an old bottle of Marmite. Is that okay?
It doesn't go off.
Yeah, just, that's what I thought. Yeah,
it concentrates and gets better with age. You know?
It doesn't go off.
Oh, please. I bow to the nation that gave us the Twinkie, the thing with a 5-year lifespan.
Apple says the HomePod will not be ready in time for the holidays. That's kind of a big miss for Apple. This is their $300 or $400 speaker that has Siri built in. They touted the sound, the room adapting sound, blah blah blah. Next year, all the company said was the production process needs, quote, a little more time to bake.
They do bake them.
I knew they baked them.
Yeah,
they do look a little bit like
there are rumors.
Most of the time,
This is going to be a hugely crowded market, especially this holiday season for. Yeah. Amazon, of course, and Google, they're going head-to-head. Harman Kardon has one using Cortana. I don't think that's going to be an also-ran. But Amazon has all these different form factors. Although they told me that my Orb, the little round one that goes to my bedside table with the camera, that it's delayed. So
you're really comfortable having like a computer with a camera on your bedside.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. What could possibly go wrong? Yeah.
If anyone hacks it, that's they've brought that on themselves.
Whatever they
not
see,
my fault.
That's their
just
fault.
Just look for someone going, my eyes.
Yeah, yeah, sorry.
I'm off the grid now.
Yeah. But no, I mean, once a decade, Apple releases a product that I just don't care about.
And this is it.
This is it. This is it. This is the one for this decade. I think 10 years ago was some other speaker.
It was the hi-fi, the iPod hi-fi.
It's like literally, like that's a pretty good ratio. Like once a decade, they announce a product that I'm just like, hey, you're just speaking dolphin to me. Like I don't understand why I should care about this.
Well, they're coming into a very crowded market because, I mean, obviously Amazon's got its stuff. Google's just launched a bunch of stuff around this. They're coming into it late, more expensive.
And Siri is frankly not as good as Amazon or Google Voice services.
This is traditionally Apple has... either led from the front in certain cases or taken existing technologies
more often than
and
not.
Just done them better.
Yeah. Much better.
You know,
the really innovative thing they were doing was actually putting together a dashboard for the many, many other smart home.
Well, I think that's the larger story.
Because that was the biggest problem I've seen with all of your smart garage door opener and your smart lights and your smart doors and your smart this and your smart that is the expectation that you are literally going to spend half an hour every day opening and monkeying with all of these different apps.
Yeah.
And so when Apple rolled out the Home app, it was basically we have all this stuff in one place, just one tap, and you can go through and customize your life. And I thought, well, this makes sense. And this is right within Apple's wheelhouse of we're going to shape this experience nearly frictionless for you.
It never happened.
I honestly thought that's where they were headed.
And the IoT developers I've talked to said they don't want to develop for HomeKit. It's too hard compared to Amazon.
Yep.
And this is why even a few month delay on the HomePod is actually a problem for Apple because they've already fallen far behind. And this is a race it's as if they're saying, we're going to go ahead, lap us a few more times.
Let's just get on with the AR stuff. Let's put the smart speakers aside.
Well, they're smart. And, of course, the rumor is that in a couple of years, Apple will have some spectacles that will have AR built in. And that would be a killer product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And AirPods, you can talk to Siri.
I love AirPods.
I just got the Google Pixel Buds. Your husband, I know, is reviewing it for Tom's Hardware. Mm-hmm. These are like, I don't know, a poor man's AirPods. They don't quite work as well. And You know, they showed off the translation thing. We tried this with Russian earlier before the show, and it didn't work
well. It's not great.
It's not great.
I don't like the form factor. I think I think ear pods are a bad form factor for translators.
Yeah. I love the idea, though, if you put in a temple piece of some spectacles.
Or maybe you get a certain, maybe like a fish.
Well, you know, that's why it's kind of fascinating that science fiction so influences Silicon Valley.
Oh, yeah.
But clearly the reason they're looking at in-ear solutions is because of Douglas Adams
and the fish.
They're just trying to reinvent the...
At least they're not trying to reinvent that horrible thing they dropped into Chekhov's ear in Wrath of Khan.
That's a good idea.
Give it time.
That came straight from the Night Gallery earwig episode, right? That's a nightmare. Right there. That's worse than any dog-like robot.
No, it's going to be interesting with AR because when you think about it, Apple effectively killed like the low to mid-market digital camera.
With the iPhone.
With the iPhone because people stopped schlepping around both their $300 digital camera and their phone because their phone, the pictures were not as good, but they were good enough.
And the camera on the 10 is nice.
Yeah.
It's nice. And the new portrait mode is like instant Morrissey album covers for anyone. Yeah.
Actually, a number of people have commented that
they do with AR to see if they manage to do the same thing where they come up with a product ecosystem that is unobtrusive enough and ubiquitous enough where they manage to define and shape human behavior that way too.
I think honestly, Apple are in a good position to do that because we're so far into the hype cycle that it's going to be at least 2 to 3 years before you can get consumer AR technology which works, which is has a battery life, which is
a lot of problems
less than a hummingbird's belch, but it's just, you know, it's getting it down to that small form factor, and I don't see any evidence as yet that we're any closer than 2 years away from that.
Do you think it'll go faster if we all start pronouncing it R?
I want R now!
Yeah, but then you just get it over one eye, and you'd be R!
Or just
actually, that would reduce the hardware.
Oh, you'd look like you'd be a parrot. The Borg. It would be so great. That is the design goal.
Yeah, there we go.
That is the design goal.
It's in your glasses. Oh, who doesn't? Flip it down, and then you flip it up.
Well,
there's a lot of opportunities.
Yeah. Or like a robot parrot that you just have on your shoulder.
It's in my hook.
And go from there.
Yeah, I mean, Magic Leap have burnt through $1.5 billion over this, and we're nowhere close to anything coming through.
Yeah.
You know, it's Google.
It's not money, is it?
Google's chucking billions at it. You know, Facebook is chucking billions at it and wasting large chunks of it.
And what about, as we talked about earlier, China, Russia?
Yeah.
We're not completely up on what's happening in these countries. I know China's working very hard on this.
Mm.
So,
and if past experience is anything to go by, China will do it better, or at least cheaper. And then allow.
But will it play in the U.S. market? Will it play in the European market? Will it play in the West?
I think you don't have to look at it necessarily as consumer markets. You can also ask yourself how, what industries are going to boost this, or whether this is going to penetrate secondary and college level education.
By the way, Beatmaster points out that the Babel fish was actually the final proof of the non-existence of God. So we've come full circle.
Although the person that did come to that conclusion then went on to prove that black wasn't white and got killed at the next pedestrian crossing.
Oh, you've read it and memorized it.
I have read.
This is where AI overlords come in.
Yeah.
I read The Hitchhiker's Guide right as I was learning English. It was a book. It was one of the first books I read in English, and I still didn't quite learn. No English, but I was like, I remember reading that book. I read it many times since then.
Must have been puzzling.
I remember the words clicking in my head because I remember seeing it not understanding, and then I remember seeing it understanding. Yeah. And there's one phrase in particular that just like wedged itself in my head. It's near the beginning of the first book when the Vogon ships show up to destroy the Earth.
Yes.
Spoiler warning.
they do.
For a book that's 30-odd years? Yeah.
And there's a line that says something like, the Vogon ships hung in the air in exactly the way that bricks don't. And I was like, I was a little kid reading it. I was learning language. I'm like, that is... Like something about that made me think. What a beautiful like sentence. Like
that's very Douglas
hung
Adams.
In the air in exactly the way that bricks
that
don't.
Is exactly Douglas's sense of humor and his style, and I love that. And I love it that it made English click for you.
Yeah, like that that line. Like
that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I don't know if they still do it in the later editions, but I've got a second or third edition of the paperback when it came out. And with the Vogons, said when they first emerged from the seas and lay, climbing and panting on the Virgin, and then it breaks. shores of their planet. And I don't know if they still do that in the new paperbacks, but it was just like, oh, I like this. This is funny. You know? Yeah.
Well, as some people know, it was originally a BBC radio play.
And the radio plays are very different. I highly recommend
it. And
it's quite good.
And they're restarting.
They're restarting?
Yep. There are going to be more Hitchhiker's Guide episodes coming down the line very shortly indeed. Mm-hmm. And trust me, I can't wait.
I wonder if the Internet Archive has the original. Yes, it does. It looks like the BBC radio plays.
Oh, just get them from the BBC. You know, it's like...
You can buy them.
Oh, yeah. And the radio shows, I mean, they're obviously widely pirated, but the BBC is worth paying for.
Actually, yeah, give them a little something.
Yeah.
Like a tuppence.
Well, if I could buy my BBC license fee...
But you know what's crap? It's BBC America.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Terrible.
That deserves to go out of business because they put ads. They take BBC things which are not meant to have ads in them. They ruin it by shoving ads in it. That must cease to exist. But
and also
but
they
I agree.
Show some really bad shows. Yes. Are You Being Served is huge over here, and it's a shamefully poor show.
It's not
also pretty old, isn't it? I feel like
Crisps.
They've been showing
that
it.
That would have been just the nadir.
It's 1970s level, and Benny Hill.
Yeah.
You know, of all the great British comedians,
is Benny Hill still legal?
I would hope it's getting close to that, but I mean, it's just like of all the great British comedy series, you have Benny Hill and Are You Being Served?
All the things.
I think Benny Hill is clearly thought crime by now.
I think actually it's a reflection of what you Brits really think of us. Oh, give them that. They'll love it.
Well, we did manage to sell Fawlty Towers to the Germans, which I would love to meet the person that did that. You know, they actually played.
They don't think it's a comedy. That's the funny thing. It's taken very seriously.
I do enjoy how one of your footy shows is called Don't Mention the Score.
But I mean, even Monty Python, they...
What's the best English comedy that we haven't seen?
Prime Minister Question Hour.
Prime Minister's Question.
That's not a comedy, but okay. No. It
although,
could be humorous.
Yes, Minister
sometimes.
And Yes, Prime Minister.
Yes,
both,
Minister is
both,
good.
Both very good.
I like the IT Crowd. It's quite good.
The IT Crowd is
but
very
we've
good.
Seen that.
I like Blackadder.
Yeah,
I like 2012 a lot. 2012 was
don't
very
know
good.
That.
Not widely seen.
But no, but I mean, certainly the second series of Blackadder has to be
Blackadder
up there on you know at some of the best.
I'm always going to lobby for Spaced because I think Spaced.
Oh, Spaced! Not seen
genius.
It.
Genius.
Spaced. You've never seen it.
Never seen.
Oh, you
it.
Must.
Oh, you lucky devil.
Early Simon Pegg.
Red Dwarf.
I love.
Great.
Yeah,
and so, Red Dwarf seasons 3 and 4.
Bobby Llewellyn is a good friend of the show. Actually,
oh,
he's
also Black
be
Books.
Out here soon.
I feel like we should actually mention Black Books, which is
genuinely
hilarious. And
I'm going to have to listen to this podcast and write everything down.
There's one called The Book Club. Well, anything. I'll watch anything with Michelle Gomez, and I loved Green Wing, which I think is not as highly rated as it should be.
Yes,
and Michelle Gomez is fantastic in that, and she's been very good in Doctor Who, and basically, if she's in anything, I'll watch it. So.
There's actually a really good Russian sitcom. No, I'm just kidding. There isn't.
There isn't.
Do Russians even have sitcoms?
Oh, sure they do.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, Spaced, get yourself the DVD set and splurge on it. It's just...
It's on Netflix?
Oh, it's on Netflix. Yes. Sweet. Okay.
Karsten knows. It's a comedy?
Oh, yes. Yes, it's how Simon wrote Peg and Edgar Wright first got started.
Yes.
So it's early Simon Pegg.
Yes, it's very good.
And Nick Frost as well.
It is listed as one
and
of
Jessica
the top
Hines
25
is in it too. Yes. She's very
best
good. Yeah.
Comedy but, TV shows streaming on Netflix right
Nick
now.
Nick Frost also did a thing called Manstroke Woman, which is...
Oh, yes.
You've seen the Man Cold thing.
Man Cold is one of my favorite sketches. Yes, I think indeed. Of that every time somebody in my house gets sick.
Yeah. But
I really got into on Netflix. I got into the original title was called Scrotal Recall, and they had to change it.
rightly so.
It's
although that's pretty funny.
No, I'm spacing. What is it? I'm spacing what the actual title is. It's on Netflix.
Chat room. Yeah. Scrotal Recall. What is it actually called?
Well, you know what? It's. Coupling.
Last of the Summer Wine.
Oh, Cold Feet. The first season of Cold Feet was pretty funny. Just the first season.
Fry and Laurie.
Lovesick. Yes, it's Lovesick.
I haven't even heard of that.
Yeah,
right.
it's very funny.
Okay.
Somebody said, that's not the Kevin Spacey show, Scrotal Recall. That's a different let's take a break.
Yes.
Maybe a good time to do that. Our show,
libel rules being the way they are.
Just one of many programs on the Twit Network. Mm-hmm. We would love for you to sample some of the others. Nothing as good as Spaced. Mm. But maybe this small movie will influence your opinion. Watch.
Previously on Twit.
It really sucks that The Martian is completely unsequelable.
Right.
Because I'm sure people would love to have more and more books with Mark Watney, but it's like,
send Watney back to Mars. No! Yeah.
Like, no, fight me. Yeah.
Triangulation.
Andy Weir is here. He is the author of The Martian. And he has a new book.
Believe it or not, Artemis is actually more true to real science than The Martian is. But it takes place further in the future. Martian takes place in the 2030s. Artemis takes place in the 2090s. It's a little silly, but you could argue that it's economic fiction.
Tech News Weekly.
We'll have a chat with once the star of Stargate Atlantis, David Hewlett, about what it takes to produce an 80s film in 2017.
Like, he just had so much fun with it. It's hard not to get sort of wrapped up in that stuff. We did those tests, and my wife said, I'm not going to New York and having you run around like that. You can't do that. I think I put a rolled up sock in there the first time. I'm sorry. The sausage is obscene.
Yeah.
So.
Now the mystery really is gone.
Twit. Technology isn't always pretty, but we are.
Oh, boy. I'm going to have to watch that Hewlett interview. Yes, please tune in. Our shows, all of them, all week long. You could find them all at twit.tv. Our show today brought to you by WordPress. I love it. When we first started doing ads for WordPress last year, early this year, they were touting that 27% of the web runs on WordPress. It is now 29%, and I'm going to take credit for that additional 2% right here, right now. But that is an amazing number. 29% of the internet runs on WordPress. I've been using WordPress since, well, the early 2000s, back in the Matt Mullenweg days when it was, you know, just first began. I loved it, ran it on my own server. But I've moved to WordPress.com because that way they host it, which is great. And by the way, their hosting is very affordable. And they service it. They keep it up to date. They keep the plugins up to date. They add great features like HTTPS, so my site is secure. They have fabulous social plugins so that when somebody visits a site and wants to share it, it's easy for them to put it on Facebook and Twitter. You may, if you're a business and you know you have a presence on Facebook and Twitter, that's all well and good, but you've got to have a website with your business name, and WordPress can make that easy. You don't need experience. You don't need to know web technologies. You don't need to hire somebody. You can do it all yourself very quickly. WordPress.com will guide you through the process. They take care of all the technical pieces. You choose a beautiful template. There are hundreds. And by the way, you can change it anytime, again and again. You get built-in search engine optimization. That's something people pay money for. You don't need that. Let them do it, and they do a great job. And because WordPress.com is a community, you can put a follow button up, and you're going to get traffic just from the WordPress community, which is fantastic. Their business plans let you access hundreds of plugins and themes. They even have plans that let you bring your own theme and plugins. A great customer support team. I actually used them a couple of times, and they're really good. WordPress experts, and they're really eager to help you get the most out of your site. 24 hours a day, Monday through Friday, weekends too. And, I mean, all of this for as little as $4 a month, a buck a week. Come see why 29% of all websites run on WordPress. You get started today with 15% off any new plan purchase at WordPress.com/twit. It's where I run my blog, LeoLaporte.com, and I love it. You'll love it too. And if you're a business and you don't have your own site, you got to do it. You got to. You're not real in this world unless you have your own website at WordPress.com/twit. We thank them for their support. Okay. Boy, we've really covered everything from God to artificial intelligence to the iPhone face.
Now let's take over the universe.
Where should we go with this? Amazon. We haven't talked much about Amazon. Anything to say about them? Their cashierless store is about to go nationwide. They've started to put pop-up stores. I was about to talk about this, actually, at the Whole Foods. You go into Whole Foods now in a lot of places, and you can buy Kindles and stuff.
I'm just hoping they don't bugger up Lord of the Rings too badly.
Mm. They have the rights to...
Yeah, and it's just, you can just see this coming. It's
$250 million. When you spend that $250 million merely for the rights...
I need to see this debate.
It's going to be great. I agree with you. Yeah. I agree with you. How could they muck it up?
An entire season of Tom Bombadil's backstory?
Yeah.
Greatest thing ever.
What would be better than that?
Tom Bombadil goes to Amazon's cashierless store. That's going to be great.
Tom Bombadil has been neglected by every major adaptation. Mm-hmm.
That's true. Time. He does not appear in any of the movies.
Yeah.
Well, he's one of the most disturbing characters in there.
I remember is him singing endlessly over and over again his little Tom Bombadil song.
It's disturbing.
Great. I want all Tom Bombadil all the time.
Tom Bombadil, the real story.
The next season.
They're going to do prequels. It won't be, it will not, I presume it's not going to start with The Hobbit.
What did they buy the rights to specifically? Because this was always like a point of contention with the Tolkien estate. Mm-hmm.
That the Hobbit is not
and also
Lord of
the head
Rings.
Of the Tolkien estate has just resigned.
Do they have the rights to the Silmarillion and all of the
God,
lore?
God, I hope don't. I don't want to see the Silmarillion.
No, but that's
trying to make
need that important story
stuff.
If you're going to get stuff. If you're going to get a series out of
Peter
it,
Peter Jackson never had it, right? So he only had like Lord of the Rings, and the Hobbit, and wasn't allowed to actually go back in the lore,
right? Set in Middle Earth, the adaptation produced by Amazon Studios will explore new storylines preceding the Fellowship of the Ring.
Yeah, but hopefully that means they bought the rights to that, not just like making, you know,
yeah, fan fiction. You don't need fan fiction. It could be between the Hobbit and
Sharon Tal.
Those fascinating years when Frodo sat at home.
Exactly. Yeah. You can find out what else is going
Sharon
on.
Sharon Tal Aguado, who's the head of scripted series for Amazon Studios, said, quote, "We are honored to be working with the Tolkien Estate and Trust, HarperCollins, and New Line."
It's great.
New Line is a movie-making enterprise, right? HarperCollins is the American publisher, and of course the Tolkien Estate, on this exciting collaboration for television, and are thrilled to be taking the Lord of the Rings fan on a new epic journey in Middle-earth. You know, that's a really good question.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to be existing content? Because there's a similar line.
Well, there's a ton of it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or is it going to be some new world entirely?
You could do a lot with that. But if you look what they've done to Game of Thrones ever since they lost the plot with the books, it's just ruined the series. So I worry they're going to do the same.
Come on, Game of Thrones.
Well, I think it's going to highlight the difficulty of prequels. Yeah. Look at Star Wars with the difficulty of prequels.
Yeah.
That's only because George Lucas was involved.
Well, also with the new Star Wars thing, they just solved that by remaking
the original
film. Since
the Fellowship of the Ring starts off with this idea that Middle Earth has had this fall from grace, and the whole point is to restore all this stuff that has fallen into dark and despair and so on and so forth. If you're going to have a prequel, are you telling the story of everything sliding into the point where the Fellowship of the Ring is necessary, or are you just kind of like, that's all background noise?
Or it could be Second Age.
A soap opera set in the Hobbits.
It could be way before Hobbits, right? Because this is all like Third Age. Yeah, this is pretty intense, nerdy
but
stuff
it
here.
It sounds like, if they say prequel to The Fellowship of the Ring, it sounds like it's after The Hobbit, before the Lord of the Rings.
Oh. Yeah.
So that's as Sauron is like assembling himself.
Oh, yeah. So you'd have Bilbo.
The whole Sauron storyline, you could go
basically be like
Gandalf is off doing stuff.
Yeah.
What's Gandalf been doing, right? Yeah. That's a good one. He disappeared, right?
Yeah.
He was in the tower, the White Wizard, for a while. What's
going on? No, well, that's after, but yeah.
That's after?
Gandalf's been coming back once in a while to get the finest
wood
in the Shire.
Yeah.
But otherwise
he goes off.
Yeah.
So we don't know what he's up to.
I'm super excited by this.
He was hanging with Jesus and the dinosaurs, I think.
As long as they just don't turn into tits and dragons like they have done with Games and Thrones.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Tolkien's strength, though. I mean,
actually, the most recent season of Game of Thrones has been much toned down in terms of the R-rated content. There's not nearly the nudity, and I appreciated that.
Look, we need to do a season of Game of Thrones based entirely on stories about the Iron Bank.
I know. You want to know more about the
finance. I want to know about the finance, right? I want all Iron Bank all the time Tom Bombadil.
How is Westeros financially solvent at this point? Like, it makes no sense. It's constant
warfare.
There's almost no agricultural base. They haven't had any industrial progression whatsoever. Why are they even the nation?
The Lannisters apparently think that, like, mining gold is going to generate money.
Yeah, but their gold mines
that
are
is
right
economically
now.
It makes no sense.
What is their currency standard?
I think the lack of serious business reporting on the Iron Bank is an outrage. And we need to see a season. But Iron Bank stories.
Casterly Rock is going with cryptocurrency next season. I could be wrong.
I would love to see an Iron Bank series simply because the guy who plays it is a part of a very funny...
He's great.
He's
super
part of
good.
The British comedy program, put this on your list, The League of Gentlemen. And it's he's a key...
Well, so they're doing spin-offs, right? HBO said they're doing spin-offs of Game of Thrones. Hope that the spin-off is all Iron Bank.
Yeah.
Kevin Spacey won't be in those spin-offs either.
No, I would watch that, though, because... it gets into espionage, and it gets into policy, and it gets into kingmaking.
As long as they don't bring back Littlefinger. Yes. I had enough of Littlefinger. I was so glad when they... Oh, never mind. I won't say anything. Mm-hmm. Oops.
Yes. Yeah. He was very good in the British version of Queer as Folk.
Yeah. Oh, I like him as an actor.
Too. And he's good on the... Aidan Gillen's very good in The Wire, too.
Yeah.
But I like him as an actor, but that character...
Love him as an actor, but Littlefinger...
Oh, the character was...
They couldn't... That was a problem, because they couldn't decide what to do with him. Yeah. He went back and forth.
I think they dealt with him very well. I mean, him and Joffrey were the two big hate figures that everyone
Don't say any more. Don't say any more, because there probably is somebody.
And then when they got married and that...
Yeah. That was really an eye-opener for all of us.
It was nearly as shocking as when...
Lord Baelish and Joffrey? What?
Yeah. I went on a pub crawl with Joffrey in Dublin. It was great.
The actor?
The actor, yeah.
Okay. That would have been a little weird if you went with the king.
Yeah. He's busy poisoning people and everything.
That's interesting.
He's given up acting now. Is that the case?
He was still Joffrey at the time. Mm-hmm. He was old enough to drink.
Was he billed as Joffrey? Was it a pub crawl with Joffrey?
Come on, hang on. You went on a pub crawl with Ireland. He's old enough to drink. You mean he didn't turn up on a tricycle going, can I have a cup of beer, please?
I didn't see how he got there.
I feel like he should befriend the actor who played Draco Malfoy, and they should just go around. Go to bars.
Evil twins.
Yeah.
I think we've reached important consensus on the segment. We need an all-Iron Bank season,
yes.
And we need an all-Tom Bombadil season.
Thank you. Yes, it's done. And certainly, that's well worth $250 million for the rights. The rights to make that. Actually,
we live in strange times.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we do, but you know, when
a Da Vinci can sell for $450 million, then
it may not even be a real Da Vinci. That's the thing.
Yeah. Authenticity is questionable. So, how much did Disney pay for the rights to Star Wars? Billions.
$2 billion. Mm-hmm.
And it was probably the smartest thing any movie company's ever done, right? I'm sure they've not only made
they've
that
they've also
money
redeemed
back.
The
well,
whole franchise.
Well, it's not just for movies, though. It's licensing and it's the parks. Because if you've been to the Disney parks anytime in the last few years, what they've done is they've managed the same brand lock-in on little boys that they've had on little girls ever since the rollout of the Disney Princess line.
Sorry, the look on your face there was just
it's true. Oh, my God.
I've always been looking for that.
This was a big hole.
No, that makes a lot of sense.
Is to build affinity from an early age, and this way you have brand associations for your whole life. And they were missing that with the boys, and getting Star Wars and getting Marvel, those two buys gave them that, because they now have little boys who run around the park in their Darth Vader capes with their lightsabers.
Rogue One was the opposite of the Hobbit movies in an important way. Like, Rogue One was so good that it made the previous movies actually seem better. It redeemed a bunch of the previous movies, including the prequels. Mm-hmm. The Hobbit movies were so bad that they actually made the Lord of the Rings movies seem worse in hindsight.
Yes. Yeah.
That's a skill, in both ways. The Lord of the Rings movies were among my favorite movies, and then the Hobbit movies made me like the original movies
less.
You guys
are so funny. You have such strong opinions about these things.
Only about the important stuff.
It was a nice movie.
Rogue One is the best Star Wars film since Empire.
Exactly.
It blew me away.
Yeah. Oh, everything about that movie is just...
Whereas the episode 7 or whatever, the latest one was just...
It was okay.
It was okay, but about halfway through, I was like, hang on a second.
It's good casting.
You've just remade the original, haven't you?
And when they gender-flipped
that's
it.
That's the funny thing. And it's just you still got Scrappy Orphan
that's
living in the desert.
That's kind of why I didn't like it, because I felt like we've been here before.
The casting is great. I didn't like the nostalgia... Yeah. The nostalgia callbacks to Han and Chewie, and I didn't... I honestly...
Seeing them on the thing was good.
We have a vote from the chat room for a series called Young Sauron. Mm. All
right. Well, so that's Silmarillion. Yeah. That is all about Young Sauron. So Sauron actually has a very interesting backstory. I could talk for about a month about it.
I tried to read it. I never could get through that. So it's worth looking back. Yeah. I was a young man.
No,
I didn't speak Russian at the time.
Sauron's backstory is quite interesting.
Okay. His interaction with the dwarves and
all sorts of
selective
good stuff.
Breeding. And yes, it's. I had a sister who was so into Tolkien that she actually learned Elvish. And
it's a great way to pass notes with your friends without the teacher reading.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah.
To have a full moon to read it, right?
Never had that luxury.
Apparently now more
tends to get in the way of having friends, though.
No one to pass the notes to.
This is pretty much a panel of people who don't have friends, and I like that.
But to get back to the whole, it was smart to buy Star Wars, and it also juices the parks for them, too.
We went to
Disneyland last year. It was impressive to see how many people were just, they were lining up to meet Kylo Kylo Ren, of all things. And
and they don't really have anything. The assets aren't done.
No.
Will you run to the Star Wars hotel? Because it's going to be like Westworld, where you're actually in the plot line. You get clothes. You look out the window of your hotel, and you see the universe. Will you run to that and say, I can't wait to be the first person to stay there?
No.
But, not me personally. Sorry, what? You just blew my mind. What are you talking about?
The new Disney Star Wars hotel.
I did not hear about that.
Going to be an experience where each guest gets a storyline.
It's going to be like a murder mystery weekend.
I already have my own storyline.
All of the cast members will be in costume and character. You might meet, you know, Jar Jar.
Oh, God, that's going to be painful.
It just sounds exhausting.
Disney says each guest will get a storyline that will touch every single minute of your day. So you're going to be on a mission.
I pity the actor that plays Jar Jar. He's going to get so many kidney punches.
You are on a spaceship, and so when you look out the window,
it completely fits in with what they're trying to do.
Okay, fine, I'm in. Take my money.
It sounds good, doesn't it?
Because they've got the Disney bands already. Their goal has been always to try to track people through parks and get total data, and they want to control the brand experience.
It's Westworld, though.
I think this
when do the robots go bad?
I think this is going to be really stupid, and I'm only going to stay there 5 or 6 times in the first
day. But you look at the Disney packages, people already pay close to 6 figures for the Disney wedding of their dreams.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
Oh, they do. There's a whole Disney wedding complex. There are websites devoted to it and Facebook groups. You can get the glass coach that Cinderella had to pull you around, and you can get your pictures taken in front of the castles at different hours. And Mickey and Minnie can come to your reception for a fee. And people are really into this. And
sometimes I question whether I'm actually part of like the human race. Like, there's so much stuff that just doesn't make sense to me.
But it's the branding affinity. They have a whole line of bridal gowns that are named after the different princesses. They now have like a series of races you can do where you can dress in like a princess tutu and go running. Oh. And, you know, I mean, I'm looking forward to the day they do like Disney retirement, because the people who have
Disney
grown up
retirement.
With,
well,
they have that city that they built, right?
Is that Celebration?
Yeah.
And I wonder if the cruise ships are gradually inching them there. But it's amazing how Disney's like, oh, is there a stage of your life? We're going to create a highly immersive branded experience for you.
I haven't been to any of the parks in a long time, but I used to like going to Epcot. They have this where they used to have this like 2-day like food and wine festival. Which was fun because there weren't a lot of kids in it. And you could wander around drunk.
Yeah. That's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I understand. I think maybe
Epcot for the hydroponics tour. Oh my God, I loved that as a kid.
I'm wondering whether it's a foreigner thing, because I've been to both Disneyland and Disney and whatever the other one's called, and it was just like, it's okay. I don't quite see what people are getting excited about, but you know, it's.
I never cared about Disney until they bought Star Wars.
Yeah.
There was not a single Disney brand that cared about.
Yeah, because you're a boy.
Yeah. Well, from a retail and how people spend their money experience, which
never
is one
cared.
Of the things
oh,
I
that
follow.
Was fascinating.
But
it's fascinating to watch how they engineer it. And then I have a small child, and we went last year. And what was really interesting was watching how the park is designed basically to get its hooks into children and convey the idea that Disney equals fun. Like, you know, she was running around in her Elsa dress, and every person at Disney was like, hello, princess. Are you having a great day, princess? Mm. And like, my feminist side is like, I don't care. But like, it really helped this experience feel frictionless for her. And as far as she was concerned, it was 2 days of riding rides and wearing a princess dress and having a marvelous time, and she still talks about it. And
here's
that
the good
is
news.
What shapes, I think this that's what gets
I
a lot
did
of
that
consumers
with my
early on.
5-year-old daughter, she wore a Minnie Mouse dress. Mm-hmm. She practically swooned when Minnie hugged her.
Yeah.
She's now 25 and has no memory of it, and is not in any way hooked into the Disney world. So there's hope yet.
Until they say the code word.
Yeah. No, my daughter's
the eyes
moved.
Korean Mickey.
Yeah. Yeah. No, my daughter's moved on to Rey now, where it's all Rey all the time, and I'm totally okay with that development. But I think if we go back to Disney and like a costume Rey goes by, that's when her head will
There's a very interesting book by Carl Hiaasen, Miami Herald journalist, called Team Rodent. Where
yes,
he looks
I've
at,
read that. It's amazing.
I love
he looks at
this
how,
is nonfiction.
No, this is nonfiction.
And
it
looks
at
like
how,
the land deals and the tax breaks and all of the ways
brilliant.
Disney has warped the Floridian economy. Yeah.
Hiaasen's great.
Oh, yeah. I would highly recommend that one.
I will read that. I think we need to read that. It's interesting because Disney had a down period. I mean, they were really almost out of business. And then along came, was it Eisenberg that turned it around?
Michael Eisner?
Eisner. And they just completely turned it around.
Over the last 10 to 15 years, they've begun repositioning themselves as a luxury brand. And they've and that's helped tremendously, is because people who want that kind of experience where it's
also you can now get the executive club at Disney. You know, they have a certain sectioned off hotels and sectioned off meeting rooms, which you can only
get into.
Disney
is expensive. We were down there a couple of weeks ago.
Expensive.
A couple of
months ago,
and it's really that expensive.
Yeah. I'm still expecting goons afterwards.
Well, they keep hiking the prices because they can, and also they are actually having a park attendance problem where there's too many people.
There are too many people,
and so they're doing surge pricing at this point to try and control the crowds more too.
Yeah.
So it's as a consumer company and how they're using tech to try to optimize profit while maintaining really high customer service ratings. It's a lot of fun to look at them and see what they're doing and how they're doing it.
Team Rodent. I'm going to have to check it out.
Team Rodent's a good book.
So you may have seen the news stories. They were all over the place about how this Thanksgiving, families with members in differing political parties will no longer gather together because the conversation would be too heated, too loaded.
Fist of death, right?
And you might wonder, well, how do they know? Actually, nobody wondered. Everybody published the story. But really, there's a bigger story here in the outline published. Why is this company tracking where you are on Thanksgiving? It's a data collection company called SafeGraph, and many app developers are putting the SafeGraph code into their apps, whether it's wallpaper or you know, maps or whatever. They've collected, because of course when you install that app you give them location permissions, 17 trillion location markers for 10 million smartphones. They did it last year, and that's where this data comes from. But the thing that's interesting is it's not in aggregate. It's individual data, because they knew, for instance, if your aunt was a Republican and your niece was a Democrat, they knew that they would be in the same family. They knew their political affiliation. They were able to report all this. And according to the Washington Post, researchers with SafeGraph used this data to identify individuals' home locations. By the way, that's the place you spend the most time between 1 and 4 a.m. Makes sense. In bed. They looked at where people were between 1 and 5 p.m. last Thanksgiving Day in order to see if they spent that time at home or traveled. And then the cell phone data showed you exactly when those travelers arrived at a Thanksgiving location, when they left, their political affiliation, their family relationships. This, I, like many people, read the news story and thought, oh, yeah, that makes sense, but didn't think about how do they know?
Yeah, but then when you looked at the research paper, you saw there was an awful lot of inference and assumption in there.
Oh, I hope that's true.
It's,
but it's also got the word safe in the name, so what's the problem?
What could possibly be wrong?
But this was the thing. I thought the real story behind this was quite how much data companies like SafeGraph were collecting. Rather than, you know, this sort of, I think, slightly bogus thing about, oh, well, people who disagree on politics leave early. I don't think they could get that from the data, but the fact that they were able to get this amount of data
at all
from, as you say, wallpaper apps and torch apps. And this is why whenever I sort of load an app on the phone, it's just like, okay, there's no reason you need that. Okay, let's remove
that about
piece.
It. And maybe look at the permissions
asked. The key part of the story is when it says that SafeGraph partners with apps. They could be weather apps, games, wallpapers, and leaves the disclosure up to the app maker. The app makers may have some tiny print that says, we reserve the right to share your location data with third parties, or they may not at all.
Partners is a weasel word.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's what you
and we reserve the right to share.
Let me give you a dollar. Now you're a partner.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like you can tell by reading this stuff. Like, Godhead is a weasel word.
Yeah.
Partners. Yeah. Partners as a verb is sort of a weasel word.
Yeah. Solutions.
Well, so what should consumers look for in these privacy statements?
Well, consumers need to start holding... Well, first of all, privacy statements need to be written for human beings and not for law firms.
Yeah, nobody reads 42 pages of...
Well, the thing is you have this... You're supposed to have this terms of use that you read through, and they are designed specifically to have you roll down to the bottom and fine, whatever, click and consent. They don't call them out in clear languages with clear consequences. But second, consumers don't. There are very few app makers that say, here is the data we're collecting from you. Here's how we store that data. Here's how we sell that data. Here's how we analyze. Like, there's no transparency at all. And it's very pie in the sky to expect anybody from a smart appliance maker to an app maker, to a social network, to say, oh, this is the data we're collecting. But that doesn't mean that consumers shouldn't start thinking, oh, someone's collecting my
data. Every app you install has that potential.
But they won't, right? No one's going to think. The people at scale aren't going to worry about this. Mm. This is a train has sailed. That is a one-way street.
Thankfully, we've got the EU coming along with GDPR, and that's going to force companies to really take this seriously.
If they want to do business in Europe.
If you want to do business in Europe, you've got to take better protection of your data. And yes, it's not going to be instantaneous, but
There's no such thing as protection of data. No. It's a silly concept.
Mm-hmm. And, there should be consequences for abuse of data, though.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah. this is the only thing to be done is we need to give up this idea that we can prevent bad outcomes by keeping data private or safe. We can't. We have to prevent bad outcomes in a world where we just assume that all data is out there.
Yeah.
And like that's like any attempt, especially by the EU, to like regulate where certain electrons containing data live and how you're allowed to use them or not use them, that's silliness.
No,
but that will achieve nothing.
But giving a legal framework to force companies to treat it responsibly,
nope.
I think that's where the value
nothing.
Comes in.
That'll do absolutely nothing other than just waste a lot of time and money. The actual work is rebuild society so that you can have bad outcomes even though all the data is out there. So that like your insurance company can have all the data about me. They can know my every thought, which they will. They're just not allowed to sell me a product based on that. Like it's... This knee-jerk reaction that somehow like we need to keep more secrets and then keeping things secret is what's going to prevent bad things from happening. It's just not the way the world's going to work. Like we need to make bad things not happen by making bad things not happen, not by pretending that we can keep bits of information in one place versus another place.
There should be, I feel like there should be more financial transparency. We should be able to, well, because this is, well, this is the thing, is literally nobody has any idea how much they're worth to these companies.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are the product, shouldn't you know what your market value is?
Mm-hmm. So I think, I do think transparency is sometimes fetishized and is often not the answer. Like what we're really trying to optimize for isn't so much transparency, but it's clarity, it's understanding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when you go from something that's totally obfuscated and intentionally made complicated, then more transparency is a good first step.
Yeah.
But if you just have infinite transparency, you're actually not going to get any better clarity. Then you're just kind of swimming in too much information out of context.
I was about to say context clarity is context.
Right. And so...
Yeah, transparency is a first step, but then you have to add context to it.
Organizations that are going to make it their job to bring that context and that can be trusted, like that's important.
Yeah.
I really think that like attempts to regulate where data lives... Mm-hmm. are wrongheaded. Like they're going to set us back because they make people think that like the outrage is that this data is being collected. That's not what's outrageous. That can't be stopped. The outrageous thing is that like it could be used in ways that you don't want it to be used.
Yeah.
And legislation should operate at that
level.
Point,
no,
I as mean, opposed to
and not just
to be
legislation.
Honest, like the thing that irritates me about smart fridges is the idea that I'm going to pay $4,000 for a fridge where I can enter my grocery list and it can keep track of my stuff, but I have no control over where that data is going.
Yeah.
Why don't I get a break?
Isn't that kind of one of the things GDPR does is give you some means of control?
It gives some means of getting financial or legal restitution if the data is abused.
Ah.
If it's applied under the absolute letter of the law, it's totally unworkable because it has all kinds of restrictions.
Yeah.
As to how
it breaks the internet.
It's going to be one of those things which will, I hope, be used selectively to curb the worst abuses. And generally, the
selective application of laws is like how we get to banana republics.
Right. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
But what if you can't?
Or how we get to elections in the US at this point?
Enforce it globally.
I mean, the only people that have held back that
should you make a law that you can't make globally enforceable? Maybe you shouldn't make that law.
You don't need to. I mean,
some laws have to be selectively applied because you can't do better.
But they should be applied universally within their jurisdiction.
It's a nice theory, but I mean, if you look at the practice over the last 10, 15 years, it's only been the EU who has held Microsoft to account over monopoly, who has held Google to account
Haven't
over antitrust.
Haven't they been trying to hold Apple to account over taxes? Like,
there is now a movement to tax. To cut off all those loopholes that Apple and Facebook and Google and others
Apple
are using.
That's why Apple is abandoning the Ireland. Irish sandwich with a double Dutch and moving to the Jersey fudge. But we talked about that before.
Yeah.
They're putting all their money in the Isle of Jersey.
Yes.
It's a lovely place. Beautiful cows.
I used to go sailing there, yes.
Fabulous dairy products.
It is a population who've...
Well, another
and zero corporate tax.
Zero corporate tax, very good banking secrecy, and a... social system which is very good at covering up inconvenient little facts.
Oh, really?
Well, something Phil pointed out earlier that is relevant to this discussion is you talked about how national boundaries are going to matter less.
Mm.
I mean, we're already seeing that with cloud computing, where people can have cloud storage centers all over the world to back up and reinforce their data infrastructure. And we have seen court cases where the U.S. government, for example, wanted to get Microsoft's data out of Ireland.
Yeah.
And that was wrangled over in court until...
It's very challenging because, I mean, this is an American company.
But yeah, I mean...
And, you know, I mean, we don't... We have,
it comes down to your data can literally go all over the world now, like, and it's subject to God knows what kind of...
Why should we tolerate absurd things like this? Mm-hmm. Like this idea that, that like somebody's going to try to get somebody's data out of Ireland, as if it makes any sense in the universe to say that this data lives in a particular place.
Well, that doesn't live anywhere.
That's that's nonsense.
That's where the bits are on the drive.
That's what's so interesting about the court cases is Microsoft could literally bounce that data to a different country.
Interesting or tedious, right? This is just various governments like wasting everyone's time doing things that don't literally make no sense. This is like a nonsensical effort. Like the real work is say, what do we want to prevent and prevent it?
It's
not
more
like,
of a mismatch, though, between the way the government systems work and the way the this modern technology works. They just, it's an impedance mismatch.
They're supposed to be. Yeah, but they're supposed to be. This is actually like the most important book I've ever read. Maybe even more important to my life than The Hitchhiker's Guide, although hard to say. A book by Stuart Brand called The Clock of the Long Now. Really short book, and there's in particular one section in it that describes the way the entire world works. It's like three pages. You read it, you understand everything there's to understand in life. But its central idea is that society is based on these, it's like a set of layers, concentric circles, and they operate at different speeds. And the outer layers move really fast, and that's fashion and commerce. And then the inner layers move a lot more slowly, and that's government, culture, things like that. And they're supposed to move at different speeds, and it's supposed to feel frustrating.
It's intentional.
It's supposed to, like, that's it working well. Like government is always supposed to feel
sluggish,
like sluggish compared to business. And there's always supposed to be that friction.
I far prefer an inefficient, slow government to an efficient, effective government.
And attempts to get rid of that, like attempts to make those layers move at the same speed, have been disastrous.
Yeah.
Like that's what the Soviet Union tried to do. They basically tried to say, okay, we're going to lock commerce and culture together.
5-year plans.
Like China right now is, you know, well, now they're kind of stopping, but over the past couple of decades, they've tried to make like nature, like like the environment move at the speed of commerce, and they've come really close to ruining the planet.
Right.
Now trying to kind of back off of that a lot. So like it's always supposed to feel like there's this impotence mismatch. Like that's how we know it's working.
I have this church, Clock of the Long Now in my other room. I'm going to get it. And I'm going to read it. You're going to show me the page.
I think it's like chapter 7, I think, if I'm remembering.
I had no idea that how the world works was in that book.
It only takes like three pages to explain it. So it is very cool. But the main thing about the status stuff is just like, okay, what are the specific outcomes that we're trying to prevent? What are the abuses? And then like the laws should make those things illegal, not try to like do things that don't make sense in the laws of physics, which is regulating where electrons live.
Right. That makes no sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or as Patterson in our chat room says, the wheels of justice turn slowly.
But grind exceedingly fine.
But grind exceedingly fine. Yeah. Let's take a break.
Consequences as opposed to.
Great panel. What a great discussion. Lisa Schmeiser is here from IT Pro Today. She's the editor there. And of course.
An editor, I should add.
An editor.
I have a grand poobah above me.
An editor there. And also.
The dean.
Dean.
Yeah, it's not inaccurate.
The host of Lisa and Phil Ruin the Movies, which is available on the Incomparable Network. Phil Libin has his own podcast, All Turtles, a weekly show about AI.
Practical AI.
Nice. All-turtles.com. He's the CEO of that. I never get it right. Artificial Intelligence
Studio,
where stuff is made.
Yeah.
And from theregister.co.uk. Oh, he found the book. Ian Thompson. You can look up this page if you want in the Clock of the Long Now. We can see. From the Register. Nice to have you, Ian, to represent the Emerald Isle.
That's Ireland, in fact.
Oh, okay. Oh, look, he found it. There's even a chart of speeds. Fashion goes like this. Commerce goes like pretty fast. Longer arrow means faster, I presume.
Yep.
Infrastructure a little slower. Governance slower still. Culture slower still. And nature, that's the slowest
and
layer
when
to
When you
innovate.
Attempt to make them move at lock speed, everything breaks.
Right. It's like a clock.
It's a clock.
Nice. Stuart Brand is brilliant, of course.
Super brilliant.
Creator of the Whole Earth Catalog. And really, in some respects, I think a lot of people, including John Markoff, believe kind of the spiritual leader of Silicon Valley innovation. You know, that what he did with Whole Earth Catalog inspired everybody from Steve Jobs to Phil Libin.
Yeah, I had a great privilege to interview him on stage at one of our Evernote conferences, and it was like one of the best moments of my life.
That's kind of neat. I hope you got an autograph. Our show today brought to you by Betterment. You know, I think everybody knows you need to invest. You need to save for your future, whether it's college, a down payment on our house, retirement. Betterment is the largest independent online financial advisor designed to improve your long-term returns plus lower taxes for whatever long-term financial goals you have. They take advanced investment strategies and technology and they deliver them in an efficient way to 270,000 customers. Yeah, there's one thing you don't want to do slowly, and that's keep up with your investments. And Betterment helps you. And what I love about this is they actually have humans involved, certified financial planners you can work with for a very affordable price based on what you tell Betterment, things like your term, you know, how long your long-term investments are going to be for, your tolerance of risk. They're going to make tailored recommendations on things like how much to invest, how much risk you could take on, the type of investment you should have. They have some really interesting portfolios, including my favorite, their socially responsible investing portfolio, which means you can invest in companies that you think, you know, meet your social goals. I love that. They give you a clear view of your net worth. And by the way, you sync in your outside accounts, bank accounts, and other investments. You're going to have on one page everything you need to know. And you get advisors who are working on your behalf. They're what they call fiduciaries. They don't get commissions for recommending funds. They don't have funds of their own. They're not trading for their accounts. They're trading for you. And you can use them very affordably. When you use the Betterment app for a 0.25% annual fee, you can have unlimited messaging access to the team of financial experts. That's really cool. That's frankly the way I'd prefer to do it. Many of you maybe perhaps want phone access. I don't know why. I hate talking on the phone. But if you do, 0.4% annually, and you can have access to that entire team. They're all fiduciaries. They're all working for you. The app is, of course, secure, two-factor authentication, advanced data encryption. Look, investing involves risk. Nobody says that's not the case, but you can do it better. You can do it right. For a free 5-minute investment review, all you got to do is go to betterment.com/twit. You don't have to sign up. You just answer some questions, and they will assess what you're investing in now, how it fits your real goals, your tax strategies, your risk exposure, and how much you're paying in fees. And that is all free with no sign up at betterment.com/twit. Betterment.com/twit. Rethink what your money can do with Betterment. I feel like we have covered everything that you could possibly talk about in the entire world of tech. I'm sad to say Tech Shop is folding. Mm-hmm. This was an attempt to make a makerspace for profit.
Yeah.
I really liked the idea. They got a lot of help from the folks at Make and so forth. But it's not financially viable, not much of a surprise. They've gone for Chapter 7 bankruptcy and will be shutting down November 15th.
And Mashable's been sold off as well this week.
Mashable, which was just 2 years ago valued at, what was it?
Yeah.
$200 million?
Yeah, right.
Sold, we think, this is funny, to Ziff Davis. Now, I put that in quotes because I used to work for Ziff Davis. Mm. Sold to a company called Ziff Davis for $50 million.
Yeah.
But Ziff Davis itself was sold a few years ago to J2, the company that brings you eFax, a fax software company.
I thought Ziff Davis owned Ziff Davis. Broke it up and sold off the
The online Ziff Davis. Yeah. And now that has bought Mashable. I don't know what their long-term strategy is, but you know what? Faxing probably doesn't have a great future, so maybe you.
Oh, I don't know. There's still the medical industry. There's banking. There's real estate.
Well, as we found out this week, there's still people using dot matrix printers because the latest batch Tuesday balked a bunch of Epson dot matrixes.
Oh, yes. My God. Yeah. You're kidding me.
No, that actually came out late in the day.
But that happens. If you have 100 million, 200 million, 300 million users, even if, you know, 1/1000th of 1% use dot matrix printers, that's a lot of people going to be pissed off.
I think one of the stories that is that's a through line through tech and doesn't get a whole lot of coverage because it's not about new is there are still a lot of small governments or school systems or even hospitals or banks or places where they're using proprietary software that has not been updated in a decade or two.
Like Windows XP, even.
There's a lot of software that's still very dependent on older operating systems or older technology in general. And these are people who are now in the we have to patch together and hack together solutions because nobody's supporting us phase of the tech cycle.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
it's the
very
same
common,
way,
isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah.
It, yeah, I've talked to IT pros who run, for example, they'll run their county assessor office in some county in
DBase 4.
Yeah. Hell, I was down at NASA for the Curiosity landing, and they're still using Windows XP on their presentation software.
Well, but that's probably safe. I mean, but, somebody commandeers your PowerPoint, that's not the end of the world.
If you're talking about places that depend on public funding, like school districts or
money.
City councils, or they are only able to upgrade every few years. They're not going to be able to push to operating systems as a service or things like that. And so their IT needs are
there's a speed mismatch.
So that's something that
security is becoming a bigger and bigger issue. And, you know, we keep. I think we need to start a new segment called the Reaper Watch because there's this massive bot net called Reaper.
It's not as big as some people are saying, but it's
big enough. It's hundreds of thousands of machines and it's growing. They said at 10,000 machines a day.
Yeah.
Taking advantage, maybe it's slowed down a little bit because every one of these web cameras and DVRs that is hackable has been hacked. I don't know. But for some reason, somebody is building a botnet with many, many more devices than were in the Mirai botnet, which, as you remember, was pretty devastating last year. And we don't know who. It sure looks like it's a nation state based on the fact that it has a Lua front end.
It could be very... It's just I've heard... We've had a lot of hype around Reaper a couple of weeks ago, but it does seem to be kicking up a gear now.
Well, and I don't even mean to bring up the hype again. I just feel like, we found out about it. No attack yet, but it's still growing. It's like that. It's just like a blob that's growing. We don't know what it's going to be used for, and at some point it's going to be unleashed, right?
It's going to happen.
Nobody does this without an intent.
I mean, if we're lucky, it's just going to be selling parts of it off for, you know, for botnets for hire. If we're unlucky, it's a state actor, and it's going to be very, very interesting when it kicks in.
Yeah. Remember, the Mirai attack brought down a DYN, Dyn, which was an internet infrastructure company, and brought down a lot of the internet.
Well, when the power grid goes down on the West Coast, we'll figure out.
We'll know why. I just want you to know we haven't forgotten about it. We'll keep an eye on it.
Yeah. Although, to be honest, the East Coast is more at risk because a lot of the West Coast things like power stations still have manual non-electronic controls, but it's the rest of the grid that's going to be the issue.
Nice.
But we shall see.
I think we can just wrap things up. This has been such a good conversation. I don't want to, you know, overstay our welcome.
Don't end on a down note, huh?
Yeah. Over-egg the pudding. Yes.
There is no way to end on an up note. What's the up note?
Christmas is coming. Christmas.
Robot dogs.
Hurrah, hurrah. No, that's terrifying.
Not for kids with allergies. It's not. People with allergies can finally have dogs.
All right.
Adorable, hypoallergenic.
When you get your iBo, you bring it in and we can play with it.
I'll get the iBo. I'll get the translator. And come back with a whole bunch
of
stuff.
Bring toys next time.
I'll have an iBo that can speak Danish. That's what I'm understanding.
That's right. Phil Libin is the CEO of All Turtles, all-turtles.com. Listen to their podcast every week. And I love it when you come in. And, of course, been a friend of Phil's and a fan of Phil's since the Evernote days.
Thank you.
Your insights are always more than welcome. Same with you, Lisa Schmeiser. You're just great. We've got to get you back more often. Editor at IT Pro Today. I will be listening to you ruin the movies from now on because I enjoyed you ruining the movies today.
Oh, excellent.
That was really fun. Ian Thompson, you know you're always welcome. It's great to have you.
It's always fun being here.
The Marmite is always hot and ready.
You know how to bribe me. I'm a man of few prices.
But next time, title, The Marmite is always hot and ready.
Next time, Marmite toast with the eggy wigs on top.
That sounds like a really horrifying type of film. Now, you see, I love Marmite, but not that much, you know?
Quite so much. We do this show every Sunday afternoon. It's kind of my last show of the week, your first show of the week. 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2300 UTC. We're more than welcome to watch live at youtube.com/twit or twit.tv/live or Twitch or Ustream. And if you do watch live, please join us in the chat room because, frankly, that's where my jokes all come from. irc.twit.tv. You can also join us in studio. We had a great studio audience. Email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a seat out for you. We'd love to have you here. Don't come without emailing us, though, because we want to, you know, for security reasons, we like to do background checks on you and make sure we've installed the appropriate software on your smartphone. So please email tickets at twit. I'm joking. Twit.tv. We will, let's see, what else can I say? We will have on-demand audio and video of this show, as always, at our website, twit.tv, or wherever you subscribe to podcasts. In fact, that's probably what you ought to do, is just subscribe. Whether you use Pocket Cast or Overcast or iTunes or Stitcher or Slack, whatever you use, subscribe. You can use your Echo and listen to every episode. Just say Echo, listen to Twit on TuneIn, and you'll get the most recent episode. It's, you know, we appreciate when you listen. Thank you very much, and we will see you next time. But for now, another Twit this is in the can. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Bye-bye.
Doing the Twit.